mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
It is the eve of Election Day, already November 3rd, 2008, and we're going to be live here for the next 4 hours. We're also going to have wide open phones throughout the broadcast today. I have a lot of news I do want to go over. I'm in a very thoughtful, reflective mode today. The more I study the New World Order, the more I study human activities throughout history, the greater my understanding becomes, and the greater my sadness intensifies, because I don't even hate my enemies. I don't even hate the enemies of liberty and freedom. I just am so sad. So sad at all the bad things that have happened throughout history and all the bad things that are unfolding now and what this country and this world is going to be going through. Because some very, very bloodthirsty people, some very, very selfish, greedy people, some very cold-blooded people, some control freaks of the 10th Order, are in control of our planet and are socially engineering us into something very bad. So today, we will have open phones throughout the full 4 hours of the show, giving you a chance to chime in instead of myself exclusively or my guest talking at you with important information. Nonetheless, I do want to hear from the listeners on any of the news items, any of the issues taking place in our world, the election, the economy, the police state, the control grid, the global taxation system that's being set up. We will discuss it all today. You know, I've interviewed Joseph Stiglitz, Nobel Prize winner for economics. He's won 2 prizes. I don't know, 6, 7 times. And I've always said on air, you know, he's a globalist, but we've had him on because he was criticizing the IMF World Bank system as predatory. But we've certainly not been saying he is a good guy. And we see them playing their good cop, bad cop with us. He has come out, along with hundreds of other economists and monetary experts, parasites, and said we need a world government. We need a world system run for and by the banks to help all the poor. So we have that clip coming up today for you. The public is now learning about what the Greenie Revolution is all about. It's about taxes. It's about regulation. It's about lowering our standard of living. And they're on record saying that. And people are now learning that Barack Obama wants to shut down basically every coal facility, coal-powered, coal-fueled power plant in the United States. 49% of our power is supplied by coal. And then people call in and say, well, it's greenhouse gas, it's carbon dioxide, it's deadly poison. Well, it's number one, it's not deadly poison. It's what plants breathe. And they say, well, coal's dirty. Well, they have clean-burning coal. 4 states have it, and it's been laid off limits by the federal government. So they saw that coming a long time ago and shut that down. So there's just a lot we're going to be talking about today. Very important information. A lot of key audio clips as well. The websites are InfoWars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. Stay with us.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
And today we're going to be going over quite a bit of that and, of course, taking your phone calls at 1-800-259-9231. GOP pollster says he cannot foresee scenario where McCain wins. This is from Raw Story. It's up on prisonplanet.com. It doesn't look good for Senator John McCain. Both campaigns have pushed polls that show their candidate in a position to win the presidential race. A Republican pollster said it is highly unlikely McCain will triumph on Tuesday. I cannot foresee a scenario that John McCain is elected the president of the United States, pollster Frank Luntz said. Remember, Frank Luntz is the guy that has been caught having fake staged focus groups on TV. And that's on record. And I have no doubt that the media's diatribe the last few months that it was a foregone conclusion that Barack Obama would be president, that that hasn't had an effect on the public. We've got to be with the winner, so we'll vote for Barack Obama. But there's a Trump card in all of this. Right around 40% of the country has voting machines put in by three different companies that have been proven to steal elections and engage in mass rigging electronically, and their own engineers and software designers have gone public, and they've been caught stealing elections, and that's on record. And so George Bush clearly lost the 2000 election. George Bush clearly lost the 2004 election, but both of the candidates basically stood down and took a dive. You don't just rig the election, you have to rig the opposition as well. And so what this will do now with Barack Obama, it looks like set to win tomorrow night, that will now have the left go back to sleep and not be concerned about election fraud. And then Barack Obama has said he will continue the war. He will even expand it. He will expand warrantless wiretapping against the American people. He has said he will increase the defense budget. He's doing everything they want, and that's why he's raised a lot more money from big international corporations than even John McCain. That's why the establishment did everything they could to not run a strong Republican candidate on popular issues like controlling the border or national sovereignty or a host of other issues. No, they ran milquetoast John McCain, knowing that he would basically throw it for Barack Obama. And that's what we have going on here. So now the public is being sold on the fact that Obama is going to be their savior and that he's going to bring big change and that he is going to remake the face of the world. They're running TV ads, radio ads, print ads, 30-minute propaganda cast where he is seated in the Oval Office already with that predictive programming, brainwashing the public with the idea that it's inevitable, that it's a foregone conclusion, that nothing can stop it. And so we need to start analyzing what it will mean to have Barack H. Obama as president. Barring some bizarre twist of fate where the establishment uses the electronic voting systems to throw it to John McCain, Barack Obama will be the 44th president of the United States. And there will be change, ladies and gentlemen, like you've never seen. Million-plus person youth brigades spying and tattling on their neighbors. Not my words, their words. We first reported this a year ago, and then it was back in the news 3 or 4 months ago. People couldn't believe it, but now some of the videos actually surfaced on YouTube of Obama calling for it. But it doesn't matter. John McCain has called for using the army on the streets of America and domestic spy forces. Because, see, both men are pushing an agenda that's already in place under SecureCorps, a division of AmeriCorps set up by George W. Bush in 2001. And that was in the planning stages way back in the 1980s. So it is a seamless passing of the baton from George W. Bush to Barack H. Obama. All of the polls basically are trending in that direction, even in the polls that McCain hails, the few polls that show him neck and neck or 1 point behind, 1 point ahead. Those are few and far between, and those are within the margin of error. When you have the great body of polls and information coming out showing that the people are sick and tired of George Bush, and so now they will go out and elect Barack H. Obama, and the system won't even have to be rigged, at least at the presidential level. There will be lots of vote stealing at the House and Senate level. There will be lots of vote stealing on those machines, lots of vote flipping, lots of gubernatorial races being cheated as they thwart the will of the people. So regardless of which man is elected, this is what you're going to get. Giant domestic spy forces, more domestic surveillance, face scanning cameras, license plate reading, tracking cameras, tracking everywhere you go, your cell phones being tracked, your phone calls being listened to, a 3 million person environmental Stasi brigade. That's also being set up by both candidates. Years in the making, years in preparation. You're going to have continued war in Iraq. You're going to have expanded wars and conflicts around the world. You are going to see massive tax increases across the board. And by the way, they've been changing the tax code in the last 8 years. The taxes have actually gone up. They'll have lots of widely publicized tax cuts and rebates, but then if you really look at the taxes, anybody that pays taxes separately from having it withheld from their check knows that they've brought in lots of mandatory overrides and different things to increase your taxes, property taxes, state taxes, regulations of every type of mushroomed across the fruited plain. We need to know what we're going into. We're going into a Barack H. Obama presidency where suddenly the left will hail all of what George Bush has built, or as a figurehead, all that's been built in his name, when really George Bush was just one more layer in the construction of this New World Order. So strap yourselves in. The right of this nation has been wedded to war and tyranny and torture and corruption, and they will support Barack Obama in all of that. The left will predominantly support him in that. Those that try to go out and protest will be rubber bulleted and shot with beanbags and sprayed and arrested and charged as terrorists, as they're now doing in Minnesota. And the long night cometh. And the biggest issue is Barack Obama was even more supportive than McCain of the banker takeover bill. People keep saying, well, why aren't they handing out the money? Why are they keeping it for bonuses? Why are the brokerage firms and select banks doing all this? Why aren't they bailing us out? Well, they were never going to do that. The bill was a takeover. The bill was economic martial law. And that's not just my words. A lot of mainline analysts have said that. The bill gave them total immunity, total secrecy to do whatever they want. But and then the Congress has released all these blacked out pages of who and what is being paid. But what the companies admit is hundreds of billions of dollars in bonuses to J.P. Morgan Chase, Citibank, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, and others. I mean, so far they're talking about 25 to 40 billion. Two different numbers have been put out for Goldman Sachs executives in bonuses, and they're talking about, well, it's already happened in England, $14 billion or 7.5 billion pounds in bonuses out of the British bailout. That was $400 million. There was a $250 billion, then another one for $200 billion. So that's what's going on right there. Just open bank robbery in front of everybody. And they're not going to stop there. They have now announced they want their world banking system with world governmental powers to regulate the planet. And they are going to have cap and trade, carbon taxes. They are going to tax the electricity in your home, your car, your fuel, your gas, your natural gas. They are going to tax the coal. They are going to tax everything. They are going to squeeze and squeeze and squeeze on top of a long, prolonged economic collapse, all orchestrated, and we have all their documents. And then Joseph Stiglitz, leaving the IMF as their chief economist in 2001, coming out acting like he's anti-corporate looting and banker takeover, comes out and announces what they're all announcing in unison. All the big heads of the banks, the head of the Federal Reserve, the head of the Treasury, the head of the British Treasury, the head of the different European treasuries, the EU treasuries, the Japanese treasuries, all of them announcing in unison, we want one global central system run by us, and you will pay taxes directly into us. And Barack Obama has said he will give them trillions, and then we will pay for it in taxes and in dollar devaluation. I'm very sad, folks. They're going to hurt us bad. It's going to be bad, and they're not going to give us any quarter. This is feudalism. This is smashing the United States forever. Captains of the New World Order are going to live it up. That's what the PNAC document said. They said, we're the global elite. We've got the U.S. as a military and a group of people to tax to fund us. Let's suck America dry and build a world government on its ashes. And they're going to do it. They're going to give you a nice black face that'll make the liberals happy. And he'll lead us into our final days. Rome. The new Rome being sacrificed on the altar of a greater world government. Planet Lucifer. That is their god, make no mistake. Time to stand tall against the New World Order. Time to realize they're not going to give you quarter. They are going to go all the way. They're never going to stop pushing. The sky is the limit. All right, let's continue to break down what's happening. We're going to go to your calls at 800-259-9231. Somebody on, one of my listeners, great folks out there, needs to, on a YouTube channel or something, put together all these videos I've seen the last month as prime ministers, chancellors, presidents, presidential candidates, Joe Biden. I mean, there's got to be 30, 40 of them, I don't know, that I've seen or read, where all the world leaders are openly saying the heads of the IMF, World Bank, Federal Reserve, Treasury departments are all saying a world government run for and by the banks, a new world order will fix this crisis, which they engineered. And we need a world currency directed out of London with three sub-world currencies, a North American currency, a European Union currency, an Asian currency with seven sub-currencies. Exactly what the Trilateral Commission called for in 74. Exactly what the Club of Rome always is calling for. Exactly what the big monetary institutions are calling for. I mean, people are like, Alex, how did you know exactly what they propose years ago? Oh, I read what they said they were going to do. I mean, I'd love to toot my little horn. That's what's so amazing about this is it's now all over the news. The public is having the gauntlet thrown down in our faces for everyone to see as clear as day. And they promise to do all these other horrible things to us, and they keep their promises. So let's go ahead. This is Joseph Stiglitz. You can watch the whole clip up on CNBC. We've also got a link to it up on prisonplanet.com. But you can go up there and watch the whole six-minute conversation. But he's going through how horrible things are and how bad the banks are and how bad America is and how our corrupt free market did this. This isn't free market. This is the very institutions he works for that engineered this and wrote. And I'm going to get him back on and confront him about it. But the point here is that they are flaunting this. They are putting this in our face. Here he is on CNBC, former chief economist. Was the World Bank. He also worked for the IMF. But the point is, he's won the Nobel Prize twice. We've had him on here many times. Here he is saying what the other flock of parrots, the monetary parasites, are saying.
A global reserve currency, rather than having the whole system depend on the dollar, goes up, goes down, has a good president, has a bad president. A global reserve currency, Keynes talked about that. A global regulator. It's clear that America exported its toxic mortgages all around the world. People thought they could trust American regulation. Obviously, they couldn't. But it's very difficult for every country to look at what goes on in every other country in a world of globalization. America couldn't function if we had to rely exclusively on state regulation as a national economy. So you need a global regulator. You need to do something about global competition authority. One of the problems is that we have these institutions that are too big to fail, but these are global institutions. Iceland, small economy, had banks that were, in some sense, bigger than that economy, but that's the nature of globalization. So we need to have some kind of global oversight on these financial institutions.
All right, there we go. It is the financial institutions that are the global government. You can literally read in hundreds of publications where they're saying you will pay your carbon taxes to them. This is world government of, for, and by the banks. And they are going to loot everything. They're anti-family farm. They're anti-small business. They are going to turn loose their green soldiers, their greeny meanies. Look out. Monday through Friday, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., we're here live.
They did a bad, bad thing.
And then back from...
They did a bad, bad thing.
What, on the network, 9 p.m. to 1 a.m., they retransmit it over Genesis.
They did a bad, bad thing.
A lot of AM and FMs there at different times. We're very thankful for all that. About 108,000 people a day. Some days it varies. Some days more, some days less. But on average, it's over 100,000 people download the free podcast every day at Infowars.com. You just go subscribe there to your phone, your iPhone, your iPod. A lot of radios and cars download the information. You can plug into them. You can also listen to the free streams at Infowars.com. We also have full archives now of the day's show posted within an hour of the show ending every day at PrisonPlanet.com and Infowars.com. And we've got a lot of new affiliates joining us today. Want to thank those affiliates in Illinois, in Florida, in Idaho, three new ones that we got last week that are turning us on today. In fact, I cut promos for them last week. That promo info is actually out in the other studio. I need to bring that in and thank those new affiliates. You know, this is not gloom and doom, ladies and gentlemen. This is the facts. And I know that I get attacked and other people that are true patriots that aren't part of the whole left-right phony system, Tory, Labor, Republican, Democrat, whatever the case is in your nation. But when I read official trilateral commission, CFR, Council on Foreign Relations documents, government documents, RAND Corporation documents, where they talk about living in a world where bureaucrats visit your house every week, where block captains, environmental captains, inspect your home, your light bulbs, your house, where your children are turned against you and brainwashed, where we have a one-child policy, where a national ID card keeps track of all of our purchases for the new carbon tax system. And on the other side of that, you have a neighborhood watch commander, which they've now announced, to look for terrorists. where you have national compulsory national service, where it's not even called a draft, boys and girls, men and women, have to serve. They just let you opt out and be a domestic Stasi. You know, when I read all of that, when I read them openly saying they were going to implode the economy by design, in between the year 2006 and 2010, in the 70s, and I see them in the last few years prepare, and even the Financial Times of London comes out and admits large central private banks were going to implode the economy by design and bring in true world government of and by the banks, and that you would pay them your carbon tax. I mean, how could I not go on air and warn people? And then how could I be called a kook or a weirdo for publishing the documents and having guests on and reading it? And let me tell you what else they say they're going to do. They say they're going to sterilize us to the food and water. They say they're going to carry out eugenics against us. They plan to kill the majority of us. And hey, I know that's crazy and that's scary. But it's all on paper. In my film, The Road to Tyranny, we give you the chapter, the name, the document, the official UN policy passed by the full United Nations in General Assembly, the biological diversity assessments, the Club of Rome documents. And let me tell you, you can deny it. You can become scared by what I'm saying and just say, oh, that can't be true. And frankly, at some levels, I don't blame you. Every day, I don't want to say I'm shaken to my core. I am chilled to my core. When I realize this is real, this is really going on. It takes a lot for me to psychologically, to mentally, to spiritually gut up to what I'm dealing with, to what we're all facing. And I wish every day it wasn't true. God, I wish it wasn't true. Because stuff's going to get bad. And stuff's going to be really bad for people like me. And I feel sad for the American people, decadent, confused, bred and raised in lies and corruption. I feel sorry even for the evil enforcers, the low-level and mid-level minions. They have no idea what they're part of. A lot of them think they're good guys. They think evil is good. They've been taught torture and lying and corruption and lying on the stand is good. They are destroyed. They're not even really living. And people in our own movement, the awakening movement, the alternative media, people who disagree with the media and the government, whatever you want to call us, dissenters, heretics, the majority of the world, I really shouldn't expect to see purity and honor and decency. All of these most precious possessions that people sell for a false reality, not even for monetary gain. I mean, why would we expect in such a rotten, twisted society that people in our own movement would be upright, would be decent, would be good, would be honorable? We're better than others on average. But I see the delusion. I see a nation, a world of people, but a nation particularly, of decadence, generation for generation raised in decadence, compared to our forefathers and mothers, who lie to themselves. I learn more and more that the world revolves around envy and greed and avarice and fear. And that most people live in delusion. They lie to themselves about who they are. They lie to themselves about the things they've done. I mean, one of your greatest mental faculties, one of your greatest possessions, as important as your sight or touch, is your moral compass and the ability to truly judge oneself and then to judge others, but not in a hateful way, to judge others according to the way you understand humans behave and act and operate. And in that lies the secret to living. Just because I understand that most central of secrets doesn't mean that I put it into practice always. Doesn't mean that I am as pure as the driven snow. Far from it. The New World Order knows man. The New World Order knows themselves, know thyself. And they choose to be dominant. They choose to crush innocence. They choose to mutate whole societies and traffic in the souls of men. What is the soul of a man? It's his intellect. It's his ideas. It's the sum of his actions in his life and the choices you've made and the knowledge you've gained and who you are. Madison Avenue, the hype machine, it traffics in the souls of men. They deal in the souls of men. I have a friend who I've been needing to talk to on the phone. I know he's been calling me, named Daryl Rundis. And repeatedly, over the last few months, I have quoted an analogy that he gave to me, a parable. And I haven't really done it properly. But it's, you know, the eyes, they say, are the windows to the soul. They are the incredibly complex, beautifully designed, intricate systems that let you operate in a three-dimensional world. When you're in your embryonic development, the eyes grow out of the brain. They're brain stalks, brain stems. And they come forward. It's literally brain tissue. The eyes are made of brain tissue. They're looking at someone's mind. You're looking literally into the windows, into their mind. Truly the windows to the soul. And people that sell out to corruption, sell out to evil, sell out to all of its forms, you can go to them and say, what would you give for your eyes? To go to a clinic, to go to a doctor, and to sell me your eyes. And, you know, you could legally do that. People sell their kidneys. What would you do if I gave you $10,000 for your eyes? Well, no, I'd be blind. That's how I see. It's my body. That's the wind of my soul. What about $100,000? No, no way. What about $1 million? What about $10 million? What about $100 million? And only a fool, maybe 1 out of 100 people, would say, yes, I'll give up my eyes. And after they gave up their eyes, they would howl in terror, begging for them back, offering that $100 million, that billion back to get their sight. So what would you give for your soul when the eyes are only the connection to it? If you're an atheist, the connection to your computer, to your hard drive, to your brain, to that collection of three brains. That's what we really have. The lower brain and the left and right side of the brain. The three integrated systems. What would you give? What would you give to get your sight back? If you lost it. You know, they've been reattaching through different medical procedures people's eyes who were born blind or never been able to see. And they can see, but they can't make sense of it ever. And it's basically useless for them. It's just pointless shapes. But someone who has seen, they can be given their sight back. At least a shadow of it, but it's getting better and better, and I think it's wonderful. But can you imagine giving up your eyesight for $10,000 or $1 million? It's the same thing. Your brain is being bombarded with images through the television set and through the media and the culture that are changing who you are, changing your beliefs, changing what you would have been. You've been given a false culture, a lie, a fraud. They sell you on a George Bush or a John McCain or a Barack Obama. They sell you on a false set of ideas of what they stand for and what they're going to do. They've given you a false download of reality. They have twisted all of us. They have poisoned us. They have put poison in the water that they know reduces your IQ, that literally blunts the eyesight of the mind, the understanding. What is thought? It is a complex three-dimensional and even four-dimensional overlay of the world around you, past, present, and future, integrating the information, taking in the data. It is wondrous. It is magic. It is a blessing. And you just take it for granted. And you set your little children down in front of the TV set with their whole future being robbed, with their minds being destroyed, with the system falsely going in and programming them instead of you rising them up, raising them up, building them up. They're being bombarded with by scientifically crafted, weaponized system. That's only one part of it. Lest they struggle through that layer, they put fluoride in their water, they put hormones to sterilize them and toxify them and to give them cancers in their drinking containers. They give them GMO food, which kills the rats and guinea pigs it's fed to. They approve it. We have a soft-killed Holocaust with cancer up several thousand percentile points in every category, diabetes up several thousand or more percent in every category, autism up several thousand percent in every category. We're dying. We're being killed because the enemy knows they can't come in like the Nazis and round up whole cities and machine gun us or work us to death in labor camps. They had to come up with soft kill, slow kill, systems that are hard to diagnose, poisons they introduce into the environment that combine in our bodies. And then they misinstruct and misdirect the doctors who are not specialists to not be able to see it. And then the specialists do put out thousands of reports detailing what's happening. You could have 90% of the Environmental Protection Agency write letters 2 years ago. 90% of their scientists and toxicologists saying sodium fluoride is deadly and is a cover term for a bunch of other poisons. Take it out now. And they say, no, we will not. People say, oh, well, if something like this was happening, people inside would expose it. They have exposed it. They're not bad. You think the average EPA scientist wants their children dying, wants them poisoned by this? I've got all these news reports and clips and studies. Going back to the 50s, they would fluoridate water supplies. They noticed the cows and horses would all die, and they learned back then on big industrial farms to not give fluoridated water to the cows, to the sheep, to the goats, to the horses. There is no doubt. And more I realize, just with the fluoride issue alone, people can go research, they can go find out, they can see all the government studies, not just institutions, thousands of them, they can find out about the doubling of bone cancer, the tripling of brain cancers, the quadrupling or higher in studies of leukemias. For God's sakes, do whatever you can to at least not drink the fluoride. To at least, they're now adding it to hundreds of foods, to at least not eat the foods, because I don't want your son or daughter, your precious angel, to die. God help us. And in that, knowing they put it in the water, knowing we have the documents where they put it in the water by design to hurt us, that tells you all you need to know about these people. And that tells you, the FBI and police, all you need to know. You know, I've talked to FBI agents I've run into over the years, and I tell them, go check this stuff out. Go check it out on Google. And they're like, Alex, I know a lot of it's true, and I don't want to get on a list looking at that stuff. See? They'll just admit to me, yeah, we know we're being watched. How is that something you want to give your children? And don't give me that bull about Al-Qaeda. Come on. If they would give black men syphilis, if they'd radiate thousands of American children to death in radiation experiments, if they would nerve gas our own troops lethally in test, and they would put sodium fluoride in our water, what else are they doing? Well, let me tell you what they're doing. They're taking everything innocent and everything good, and they're destroying it. They're annihilating it. You know, I meant to get back into how they're announcing everywhere the carbon taxes, the carbon regulations, the things they're going to do to us. And I want to go over that, and I have all these other clips. But Obama youth brigades. Lou Dobbs about how the U.S. government's funding Iranian nuclear weapons systems. Of course, we told you that years ago. I've got a lot of other clips I want to play, but I promise when we get back, we're going to go to Dave, Ray, Peter, Tom, Billy, and others about the election, the economy, and everything that's unfolding. I just know this. We've got to say no to what's happening. We've got to stand up. We'll be here covering it live.
Deep down in Louisiana, close to New Orleans.
Let's go to your phone calls.
Among the evergreens, there's still a log cabin.
Dave in California, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Alex, my brother, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay, man. My name is Dave Short. I want people to know that. Make sure they get my name right in my file. And I'm calling from Northern California. And I got one thing to say to you, my friend, and what I think is a very important news tip. I'd just like to say it to you, man. It's so hard not to lose heart sometimes, you know, and especially, God, I'm so glad I'm not you, my man. But you are, honest to God, the perfect person in the perfect place to say these things. You've got the mind for it. You've got the ability to express yourself so clearly, and you've got the ability to see things in the big picture and the small picture. Don't be so hard on yourself, man. You know, we all love you, dude. You know, really.
Well, I mean, don't think I'm even bummed out so much today. I'm just sad. You know, it was okay when I could hate people in mainstream media that lied and twisted things, but now I don't even hate them. I see how pathetic they are, and it's sad for humanity because, and then I look at the cold-blooded New World Order controllers, the social engineers, and I realize that so many people that are going along with this system that are so haughty and arrogant and full of themselves, just the general public, I just wish they knew what I knew, because I wish they could see the research. I wish they'd take time out to look into it and find out we're telling the truth. We really got a criminal government that stages terror attacks. They really do poison us. And I realize it's just going to get worse.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, when you're refining any precious metal, the dross rises to the top, and you skim the dross off the top and you discard it. You know, perhaps people need to start thinking about ways to skim that dross. And but I do have a comment on a news story that seems to have kind of slipped through the cracks, and I think it might be important. I find it ironic that we're possibly going to be voting for a president who may not even be a legal immigrant or a legal member of the United States. And at the same time, we have the American Civil Liberties Union, who, you know, they're not always perfect, is reporting about the Constitution Free Zone. Have you heard about that yet, Alex?
Yeah, no, that was actually under Agenda 21. People are just now learning about it. 125 miles on all the U.S. borders and coastlines. And
right.
That's about two-thirds of the population lives on the border or on the coastlines.
Yep.
And, yes, they're saying Homeland Security on record says it's a Constitution-free area.
Would you mind if I just, if people will simply search for ACLU and Constitution-free zone, they'll see a map that'll knock their eyeballs out.
Yeah, I've asked my writers a few weeks ago to actually do a report on that. We need to get a more detailed one out to give people the clear picture, but yes, it's really happening.
Can I just make one more brief comment on it?
Yes.
Basically, what it boils down to is north, south, east, and west, it's a 100-mile border that encompasses, you know, well, on the northern border, we've got Seattle and Spokane and Coeur d'Alene. These are the ones that are kind of on the border. North and all everything north of that, all of Michigan,
and
all
they
of
don't search
Maine.
People when they come in. It's deep inside the country.
Yeah. I mean, it's everything. It's all the big metropolitan.
And now
area.
They're offering a North American travel card separate from your passport. And see, that's going to be for the immigrants. This isn't to stop the immigrants. This is to munialize the border. It's part of the North American Union.
Absolutely. And of course, if they can do this, they can get away with it, which it appears that they're trying to do. And people just ignore it and say, oh, well, it's not affecting me. Then it's going to go right up the NAFTA Super Corridor and 100 miles on either side of that. And then it'll be 100 miles on either side of the 100-mile border.
You just hit the key, and that's what I told my writers to do a story on. They're also saying in the SPP there's going to be buffer zones on the 84, or is it 83, federal highways, the interstates. And so those will be international zones, and they're going to tax us for the North American Union on those roads.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
We are live now into the second hour, taking your phone calls on any issue you wish to discuss, the economy, the political candidates, what's happening in the world today. Coming up, Lou Dobbs reports on what we wrote stories about at PrisonPlanet.com and Infowars.com 5 years ago. And I'm not tooting our horn. I'm pointing out again, we're being accurate here. The U.S. government has actually been funding Iran with the non-peaceful nuclear components directly. So has Israel and the U.K. And we need to do flashbacks, by the way, at Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com of those stories. Lou Dobbs has reported a tiny fraction of just how bad it is. But we do have that video clip if you want to watch it up on PrisonPlanet.com. That's coming up. Also, the carbon taxes, what life's going to be like under that, a lot of key clips. But I want to continue with your calls. Ray in Colorado and then Tom, Billy, Dan, and others. Ray, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi, Ray.
Hi, how are you, Alex?
I'm fine.
Say, listen, I just agree with that previous caller. You are a brother to us all, and we love you, and we pray for you. You have been speaking truth, veritas, to the people, and we just really appreciate it. And I just wanted to agree that what does it profit a man to gain the whole world yet lose your soul? And I just see it coming down to that. And I just want to make one more comment. As a Christian, I do want to urge people to look at the prophecies that are coming true, because there is truth and there is lies. Just there's no denying it anymore. And I just wanted to add that the Bible does predict that they will make you swear allegiance to their system in order to buy or sell, and that you'll forfeit your soul forever, because that's what they ask. They ask for your soul.
Yeah, let me say this, you know, to the listeners that don't understand. The point is, would you give $1 million to lose your eyesight? You'd say no.
Absolutely.
Well, losing your mind, losing who you are, buying into this world system, you know, that is a brainwashing mechanism. You are literally losing your soul through that. And even if you're an atheist, even if you are an agnostic, the globalists admit they are trying to set themselves up to watch us, to surveil us, to regulate us in an omnipresent fashion. And it just so happens they are occultists. Even if you don't believe in God, they really do. So, again, it's so amazing that they are building this world system. And it isn't just to buy or sell with the thumbprint, the face scan, as they're admitting they're doing. And it's all coming in now. It's that they're going to use the phony environmentalism to regulate our everyday lives and put us on a carbon credit ration. And so that's going to be their excuse. I mean, it's so horrible. It's total slavery.
It is. It's horrible, and it's total lies. And you have said it, Alex. You said they worship Lucifer, and he's the father of lies. So they believe it. They believe in him. And I just admonish your hearers to believe it too, and choose light. Don't choose darkness. We love you, Alex. God bless you and your family and your staff members. We are praying for you.
Thank you. Well, I'll say this: I've been a very worldly person. And but I've always, at my core, been a good person, and I've always belonged to God. I've always belonged to the good side, though I've certainly stuck more than my toe in evil. And I'm not afraid of dying. I'm not afraid of being killed. In fact, I'm committed, and I'll do whatever it takes. And Lord knows I'm a target. Stuff goes on I don't even talk about here on air. But every day, I feel the Spirit of God, a spirit of goodness, and love and compassion and discernment. It's I can't even articulate the understandings I have. It's so complex and so multivariate and deep. I just can't even. It's just overflowing. And a lot of times it's not even a selfishness. I don't want to die because I want to continue to grow. I want to continue to become a better person. And I want to continue to forgive people that have done bad things to me. But forgiving people that have done bad things to you doesn't mean you forgive corruption and that you don't stand up and fight it. And yes, even if you deny spirituality, folks, the New World Order, they believe in it, and they serve a dark god.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
Several of them, things I keep forgetting to cover. I have to be very careful about what I say, and I realize that more and more because of the great responsibility I have, and I'm humbled by the way. Because I'll say things, and then people misconstrue them or start fights over them or attack people over them, and so I want to be clear about this. Last week, Ted Anderson got a call from one of our fine affiliates, and I'm not even going to say who, but it's out in California, saying, hey, people are calling us saying that Alex is on air, saying that we're going to take him off air. And I said, well, that's news to me. And then Ted said, well, no, I even got some calls from listeners about it. So what did you say? And then Ted gave me fragments of what was said, and I went, oh, no. I was talking about how I got taken off the air by probably 70% of the stations I had. I mean, I was up to 80-something. Right after 9/11, because I went on air and said 9/11 was an inside job. And then a lot of stations took me off the air. And I was saying that most people will never be in that position. I mean, I've known other Patriot networks and talk show hosts, when they get heat, I mean, they'll have whole networks where 9/11 inside job isn't allowed to be discussed. That was a network out of Austin, or less people say I'm talking about some other network. I was not criticizing any operating network or any station currently carrying this show. I was speaking about being knocked off the air in 2001. I mean, I got up to 80-something stations, mainly mom-and-pop stations, none of the big, you know, corporate giants were carrying us. They have an oligopoly of more than 90% of the talk stations, just Clear Channel, West Wind, and a few others. But mom-and-pop stations, a lot of them with huge listenerships, you know, privately owned stations, they put me on because they were anti-New World Order, real conservatives, libertarians, you know, they liked the message of anti-UN, anti-world government, pro-Second Amendment. And the attacking Bill Clinton, who certainly deserved it, you know. And I could go on air and talk about the government bombing Oklahoma City, and that was fine. I remember going on other mainline talk shows on Clear Channel stations as a guest, and going on there and you know, talking about Oklahoma City being an inside job, and the host agreeing and every caller agreeing. It was when I went on air and said 9/11's an inside job. In fact, I even lost quite a few stations in the 2 months leading up to it, saying they're going to attack the World Trade Center, they're going to stage an attack, get ready, they're going to launch a biological attack, get ready, they've got to pass all these laws. I was reading in a Pentagon report where they were saying, we're about to be hit by terrorists and our world will change forever. NORTHCOM will be formed and blah, blah, blah. And so I was mainly just talking about never selling out, never compromising, never watering down what I have to say. In fact, from memory, I think Ted said a few stations called a couple weeks ago when I talked about that, thinking I was talking about them. I'm not talking about our dear, precious, wonderful stations that carry the show. And we really appreciate all of you out there. I was talking about the repercussions I have gone through for never compromising. You know, it's easy for Johnny-come-latelys to come along and talk about 9/11 being an inside job today. But did you do it years before 9/11, making films about government-sponsored terrorism? My first film covered that. America's Destroyed by Design. I mean, did you do it on the day? I remember going down to be a guest on George Humphrey's show, great guy, on the day after 9/11, and his producer, a lady I'd known for years, began screaming and yelling at me in the hall, you know, saying, you know, shut up, you know, you're a traitor. No, it wasn't an inside job. Now, 6 months later, she was doing shows about it being an inside job, but never really said sorry and never really was nice to me again. Because people aren't big enough when they've been wrong to admit they're wrong. I am big enough, and I'm trying to be big enough of a person to not be a small person and to admit I've been wrong about a lot of things. And I've handled a lot of things wrong. But again, I said that would be a program note. I just spent 5 minutes on it. The other program note, they have international Iranian television. Press TV, it's in English worldwide. I'm also on Russian TV live tomorrow. I'll be on Iranian TV in studio on Wednesday. But they keep wanting to have me on a phone interview while I'm on air. I never have the time to do that. And you'd be surprised. You think this would be a U.S. bashing fest on Iranian TV. It's not. In fact, every time I've been on, it's 2-1 on the show against me with a pro-U.S. view. And by U.S., I mean the people running the U.S. So they say they're going to do a simulcast today in the fourth hour. We'll see if that happens. They did it before and then canceled it. That should be interesting. But you will hear me passively on air with their host talking and then the other guest. And I need to ask Craven what the topic is. But it's very interesting to go on these international English-speaking channels. So that should be interesting. That's coming up. So we'll see if that ends up happening in the fourth hour today. Okay, I said I'd take your calls. Let's go to Tom in Las Vegas, Nevada. You're on the air.
A very good morning or afternoon to you, Mr. Jones, and thank you for having me on.
Thank you.
Okay. You know, I just, so many of the things that you say are so brilliant, and I hear a sadness in your voice today. It kind of saddens me, and I'd just like to remind you and remind the listeners, you know, when you start trying to battle these Luciferian freaks on their own battleground, right, I think that it's really easy to get kind of bogged down with the darkness, right, because that's their forte, that's what they do. And so I would just like to say, like, I think for myself, like, the one way that I've found to combat this stuff is really the love thing, you know, just trying to maintain, and you mentioned this earlier, and it's brilliant, just, you know, it's not a pity thing, it's just, you know, these are people too, like, we're all fallible, we all have issues, and it's just, at some point, you have to hope that these people are going to look at what they're doing and say, wow, this is really insanity. What I'm doing, what I'm perpetrating is just insanity.
Poisoning children? I mean, what the? Putting HIV on purpose in over 1 million doses of Factor VIII and knowingly shipping it out and laughing about it? Bayer did. I mean, you know, there's thousands of things like that. I mean, the reason I say I have sadness, actually, I'm empowered by almost surrendering. And you know, I flux back and forth between being angry, being enraged, being focused that way. But that tires me out. Actually, when you hear me, you know, admitting I'm sad, it's more of a commitment, a full commitment, a deeper level of commitment. I keep saying it's a full commitment, but my commitment just gets deeper, levels I didn't know. And I'm at peace. I'm at peace with whatever happens to me. I'm at peace with whatever happens to my family. It's just a sadness, and it's the world is so beautiful, goodness is so wonderful, decency and wholesomeness and creativity, it sparkles with a billion colors. And so at one side, I'm so thankful to the Creator, I'm so thankful for all the good people in history, and I'm so honored to stand with them and humbled by how dirty and bad I am compared to so many of the other beautiful, wonderful people that are here today with us and that have come before. And I'm also very sad over the years that I, you know, hadn't grown to the point I'm at now, and I know I'll still grow more, but I could have done a better job. So by sadness, I don't know. I mean, it's such a deep thought. There aren't even words to describe it. It's just the knowing that the New World Order is real, the knowing they're really going to do everything they said they're going to do, the knowing that they're going to kill most of us listening right now, the knowing that it's all pretty much going to happen. And I think that's in God's plan too. And to know it's just overwhelming.
And I appreciate all those thoughts, Alex. But at the same time, I think when we start to say, "Oh, I," and it's not yourself, and I don't hear you advocating these sorts of things, but there are a lot of people in the truth movement and so on that say, oh, we need to get shotguns and we need to go kill them and this sort of thing. And I really think that, when you start to have those dark thoughts, when you start to say, you know what, these people deserve to be exterminated, then you're doing exactly what they want you to do. That's, I think, part of their con, is they're trying to get
us. Yeah, because
so
they don't care about the cops and the military. They want them to be chewed up
right.
in a fight with them. That's part of their plan. But what do you do when slavering punks in black uniforms are dragging you and your family away? There is a time to resist, but I think the offensive going out and looking for it will empower the enemy.
And I think you're right about that. And I would just have to say, though, that I think that Jesus, if he's your role model, that's you know, great. I think there are other examples. You know, if you look at Gandhi, if you look at MLK, you know, the kind of nonviolence thing, because and there have been people who have brought this up. It's like when you start to play by those rules, then you become that same dehumanizing force that they're trying to force upon you. And so I don't really have a good answer for what happens when they kick down your front door, right? Like, I don't think there is a good answer to that. But I just think that in the interim, until that sort of stuff hits the fan, if
it's
you will,
going on all around us.
Right.
We just don't hear their screams.
Well, I think that we have to pray for these people. I think we have to stay positive. We have to stay full of love. I think if I could just quickly, there are two really good free books on the internet. The Kingdom of God is Within You by Leo Tolstoy, and The Imitation of Christ by Thomas Kempis. I have nothing to sell, but they're out there. They're really good free books, just like how to try and cultivate that kind of loving God thing inside you and not buy into that madness that they're trying to sell us, because I think that is the true measure of their power and their wickedness, is that when they start to convince us to play by their rules, I think that's where their power really lies and where the destruction really lies. And I would just like to warn everybody against that sort of thing. So,
all right,
thank you so much for having me.
Tom, thank you. Billy, Dan, others, your calls are straight ahead. 1-800-259-9231. A lot of audio clips coming up later as well. I haven't even gotten into all the news yet, but I will do that. But we'll take more calls before we go there. This is the GCN Radio Network. I'm Alex Jones. My websites are prisonplanet.com. We're fighting the creation of the prison planet, and Infowars.com.
There's a man going around taking names. And he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around. The hairs on your arm will stand up at the terror in each sip and in each sup. Will you partake of that last offered cup or disappear into the potter's ground when the man comes around? Hear the trumpets, hear the pipers, 100 million angels singing. Multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum. Voices calling, voices crying. Some are born and some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come.
Let's go to Billy, Dan, Scott, and Susan, and others.
Is in the
Bill, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, Alex. I got to say thank you, man. I've tried to call on here. I've been on here for an hour and 10 minutes waiting to talk to you. I just had a couple of questions for you. I just looked up the Constitution Free Zone, and that is really scary. But my questions were, one, I recently saw a thing on YouTube back when they Katrina hit and the military was going through taking all the guns, and one of the military guys right at the end gets asked by the newscaster, would you shoot an American? And the guy bluntly said, yeah. And that really scares me, that our troops would shoot our own people on American ground. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, and now in Illinois, they're using the Army to confiscate guns, and they're announcing they're going to use Blackwater in domestic operations, and it's really happening.
That's just...
but it's going to be incremental.
Say.
It's really happening. I mean, they haven't hired 26,000 preachers covertly to tell their flocks to turn their guns in and go to FEMA camps when they're told, because, you know, they're playing games. This is domination. This is total enslavement. They want a Soviet/Nazi-style culling here in the U.S.
And the other thing is I've watched almost all your movies, and I got to say thank you. And I try to tell anybody and everybody I can, my doctors, my lawyers, my friends, my family, my foes, my enemies, to watch your shows and learn for themselves. I almost got into a fist fight with my brother trying to tell him about the NAFTA Superhighway and the Trans-Texas Corridor, until the fact that my wife turned it on and he sat down and he watched it, and he was like, oh, my God. It's stuff kept out of the mainstream media. Like one of the things I recently saw, Barack Obama, the lawsuits filed in Philadelphia from the Pennsylvania Senator Byrd about Obama being born in Kenya and all this information. And they had so long to provide the information, and Obama's party won't provide the information saying he was born in the U.S. That's almost like you pointed out with them trying to get Schwarzenegger as president, a non-U.S. citizen.
Well, he's 22nd Amendment. He's... He can't be president because he's not native born.
And that's what the lawsuit filed against Obama, because it's saying, you can look it up on your Google search. The lawsuit
We've had Berg on, the former deputy attorney general there in Pennsylvania, and we've gone over that. But that's why the establishment also likes Barack Obama, because they can destroy him anytime they want with that information.
And people don't know it because it's not mainstream media.
And now all those Republicans who supported the police state and torture and spying and NORTHCOM, all that power is going to be handed to Barack Obama.
It's just...
And you've heard him talk about us pathetic gun owners clutching our guns.
Mm-hmm. And in your opinion, do you think it's going to turn out to be a big civil war? They're going to turn it out to be if Barack loses or Barack wins, black versus whites, and this and that, and they're going to...
We're going to find out, but, I mean, there is a serious chance of riots and things if Obama doesn't win. The think tanks have said that, but let me go ahead.
After hearing all that, I heard that his VP, Joe Biden, head of the Council of Foreign Relations...
Called for a new world order twice last week, and Newsweek is calling him the president of the world.
Yeah, not speaking as... trying to say wrong or imply this in any way, but if something like with the executive orders that Bush has signed in, if something did happen to Obama with all these so-called terrorist threats and plots to kill him, Biden would take over, and that would give him the ability to declare martial law, declare everything over that Bush wants.
And they're saying they're going to try to shut down talk radio and the web, but it will all unfold in the fullness of time, won't it?
Just got to say thank you. Keep doing what you're
doing. Thank you, my friend. We got to jump. We'll be right back with more calls. I want to play a whole slew of Barack Obama clips dealing with the new carbon taxes we're all going to be living under. Dealing with shutting down the coal-powered power plants.
Welcome to your life.
I also want to play Lou Dobbs talking about the United States through Russia funding the nuclear program of Iran. But right now, I'm going to give each caller about a minute and a half because I want to get to all of you. Let's go to Dan in New Jersey. You're on the air.
Hey, Alex, what's going on?
Worldwide broadcast, sir. Good to talk to you.
All right. Big fan. I want to get your opinion. If you knew anything about this guy running for president and senate in New Jersey, his name is Jeffrey Boss.
He's running for the president and the senate?
Yes.
Didn't know you could do that. I don't know him.
Yeah. Well, I got my sample ballot about a week ago, and he's actually on it. I actually saw this guy. I was at the 9/11 Truth Rally in 2 months ago at Ground Zero. He was there passing out literature, and I had no clue who he was. And I just wanted to know if you knew anything about him. He's got, if you go to his website, I'm just going to put it out there. I'm not even sure I'm going to vote for him, but it's JeffBossForPresident.org, I believe.
Well, regardless if he's a 9/11 truther, by running, he gets to talk at candidate forums and get on the news. And so, again, that gets the truth out. So, sounds great to me. Resistance is victory.
Yeah, I wasn't sure who I was going to vote for president, but I think right now it's Cynthia McKinney. She seems like the only honest person that's on the ticket right now.
Listen, I hear you, and I appreciate your call. She's a very nice lady and exposed the trillion stolen by the Pentagon and government white slavery rings and other things. But she is an anti-gun person, and so I won't be voting for her. Chuck Baldwin's far better. Even Ralph Nader's far better. So I think you have a lot better choices there. But you can make your own decision with that. Let's go ahead and so you got all these well-meaning liberals like McKinney. Oh, let's have a bunch of taxes and regulations. That's only for the big elites. They only use that to straitjacket us. But she's a nice lady. Let's go ahead and talk to Scott in Arizona. You're on the air, Scott.
Hey, Alex. How are you doing today, man?
Good, sir.
Hey, two things here. I think that maybe McCain might take this thing and be in like an upset, because I'm starting to hear the mainstream press starting to show that John McCain's coming up in their polls and, you know, all the hogwash they feed everybody. But I think they're saying that what happens if McCain does an upset.
But see, it's all about the spectacle that these guys run something and there's about to be some change. Either way, the guys are identical on real policies.
Oh, I agree with that. I'm just saying, as far as an upheaval, as far as the, you know, thing with Barack Obama.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if Barack Obama doesn't win, I'll be surprised if we don't, because people have said, a lot of these activist groups have said, they're going to burn major cities. And that'll, of course, will just destroy their own neighborhoods and make inner city folks look bad. And the system will love sending troops in, and that'll sell the general public on, see, we need to have an end to posse comitatus to keep us safe.
Exactly.
So either way, the New World Order wins. But I think they want the new front guy. He is for them on every front. He can sell the agenda. I really think it's going to be Barack Obama. But listen, Hillary was the anointed one, and I was wrong on that. So I'm not always right.
I thought the same thing. So I don't know, man. I think that McCain might throw an upset just to cause this thing to happen. It would fit perfect in the plan.
Look, with 40% electronic fraud machines at least, the establishment's going to have Wednesday who they want, okay? Probably by late tomorrow night, but for sure by Wednesday, unless they do another Supreme Court deal. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that if Barack Obama doesn't win, it's been a stolen election. But let's say there was an upset and people got scared and McCain was winning. If the system wants Obama, they're going to cheat for him. Either way, who they want, they get. And people go, oh, that's kind of a negative view. We know these machines are fraudulent. We know they're in about 40% of the country. You know, the feds paid to have these put in, and we're never going to get back our real voting. Look, notice the politicians would at least act like they were doing what we wanted before these machines went in, and now they just don't care. There's a reason for that. There's a reason Congress does whatever they're told by the executive, because they know about those machines. I appreciate your call. Let's go ahead, bring up some good points. Let's talk to Suzanne in Tennessee.
Hey, good morning, Alex.
Hi.
Just the day before the election, I catch the news early in the morning because I work in a hospital and TV's always on.
Sure.
And one of the headline stories this morning was they're doing mock disaster drills. They're having a nuclear accident.
They do that to train you to go under federal control and to create the psychological impression that terrorism is real and prolific, so you will accept being conquered by the federal central power that itself is owned by private offshore banks openly setting up world government right now.
Yeah, that's just about the way it is. And, you know, I too, like you, feel a little bit nostalgic and sad. And I just, you know, watch the kids play and try to remember how beautiful America is today. You know, who knows what we got tomorrow.
Well, but I mean, it's guaranteed. It's going to be engineered, controlled depression with everybody getting a government job or a government-paid paycheck. You'll still work for private corporations, but the checks are going to come from the government. This is total enslavement. Total. Millions of environmental bureaucrats in your home, your ranch, your farm, the animal ID, the premises ID, total regulation, national ID cards to buy and sell, people being arrested, people disappearing. I mean, they are really openly announcing it. This isn't just me reading documents now. They are setting it up.
Yep, they sure are. Well, listen, you try to have a good day anyway.
You too. God bless you. I appreciate your call. Mike in Georgia, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Alex. How you doing?
Fine. I'm doing fine.
I just wanted to make a point about Ventura's stance on the border. I'm not saying the fence is going to totally fix everything, but he says it's going to be like an East Germany situation where, you know, it's going to be there to keep us in. But
well, it is, I mean, now they're trying to make fishing boats to take you 10 miles out on the border of Texas on the coast. They're trying to make you have a passport to go fishing, past the 10-mile marker, the 12-mile marker. And so I understand. I had huge arguments with him in private. His view that it's going to be used to keep us in, not out. He says we should go after the employers. But, yeah, I mean, he's wrong on that.
Okay, and just one more quick point. If anyone who thinks the government doesn't know that they're shipping the drugs in, I just saw this guy was busted, this high-level federal police criminal in Mexico. That was a couple days ago, and then they found out 8 other criminals up there were doing business with the drug cartels. And this is happening every week. And we're sending $60 million or $60 billion a year or something like that down there to fund them.
Yeah, well, they won $164 billion. And, again, that's a drug war. It is a drug war, but only to stop the cartels that aren't part of the Chase Manhattan Citibank money laundering operation. And that's on record. So it is a physical war. In Texas, California borders, down into southern Mexico, over who will control the drugs.
Yeah, it's pretty sick.
And then they tell the public, oh, we're stopping the drug dealers. I mean, they've had, you know, the deputy presidents caught with hundreds of millions in their house, in their basements. I mean, it's all just a complete fraud.
Yeah, they really want that money in those banks, don't they?
Well, it's not just that, it's the control. See, study how the British brought down China. The Chinese government wouldn't let opium in. They knew how bad it was. So the British, East India, came in. This is mainline history. This is, you know, an encyclopedia. This is not my opinion. And over 50 years, they corrupted first the port cities, then the internal cities. They bought off the local police because the cops are like, yeah, people want opium. I'm going to get all this British money. And so they were being corrupted and taken over by British intelligence. And then they finally broke the country in 10 parts.
Right.
They use a black market to corrupt the police and to create violent gangs that scare the public into then saying, give us a solution. And then the British said, okay, we'll just bring our troops in.
Did they have strict drug laws in China, though?
Absolutely.
They did?
Absolutely.
It's the same model.
But then you see, you get an army of drug addicts who will rob, kill, steal to get those drugs. And who has those drugs? British.
Yep.
It's the same deal.
Listen,
cocaine and heroin were sold at every corner store, and you had about 25 to 30%, depending on the federal histories and studies, who were on drugs that they are today. And it was pure and it was clean. Still, it was bad, and you had a lot of lotum addicts, and a lot of people grew up drug addicts because rich, spoiled families would give the babies laudanum in a sugar tit, as they were called. That's a sugar cube inside a piece of silk or cotton tied up. They'd put a drop of laudanum in there, and baby don't cry no more. So, I mean, you know, I'm not saying these things are good. The point is that they understood. They said, we'll make it illegal, then we'll buy off all the police, just like Prohibition. They're not in charge because they're stupid. I appreciate your call. Let's go ahead and talk to Alex in Florida. You're on the air, Alex.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Hey, how you doing, Alex?
Good.
I just wanted to note the connection between how we control the Earth as far as the studies on Wilhelm Reich go, and what are your thoughts on that?
There's a lot of suppressed technologies, a lot of advanced technologies. The FBI, you know, did shut him down, did raid him, did raid Tesla.
Right.
There are a lot of things that were invented 100 years ago, 80 years ago, that have been suppressed.
Right.
But there's also a lot of quacks and charlatans on the Internet selling garbage that gives all the real systems a bad name.
Right, I found a lot of that.
So see, again, things are complex. It's not, I mean, now there are hundreds of university studies showing that cold fusion is real and works, mainline universities, but the news came out and just put out one false report. First, they built it up and said, it's huge, back in the early 90s, and then they killed the story and saying, oh, it's all fake. And then people still have that memory in their head. Meanwhile, they've got magnet machines. They've got systems that separate water into gases and run power. I mean, they've got it all, sir.
A lot.
Also,
I just wanted to say, if people don't really believe what you say about as far as if you say something on real TV and things like that, if you say something about the 9/11 being an inside job, just take a look at Rosie O'Donnell and how as soon as she made her little argument with somebody that was in the audience there about it being an inside job, right away she was shut down.
That's right. They fired her. They kicked her out to send a message. And people say, well, why do you appreciate a Rosie O'Donnell or a Charlie Sheen or a Willie Nelson or the best actress this year, all these people? Because they have a lot to lose. They're showing courage.
Right.
And so I admire that courage, and I appreciate your call. And then people can, you know, attack the messenger. Oh, well, she's this and that. Well, you know what? So what? She's got guts, and guts is enough. And you can't just sit here and judge and hate on everybody. You know, none of us are perfect, folks. We've all got problems in our own lives. Let's take a final call from Thor, and then I got to play some clips. Thor in Norway, you're on the air.
Hi, Alex. My name is Thor. I'm from Norway, and my name is after a Viking god. I wanted to thank you for...
king of the gods, the head guy.
Yes, yes.
Nobody's named Loki, are they?
I wanted to thank you for enlightening us. I have been listening for several months. It's a crazy world out there.
It certainly is. What is your message from Norway?
Yes,
my friend from Norway.
I want to tell the people out there about the list on the internet. It's the Norwegian Freemasons on www.tv2nyhetnne. It's 9,000 men, shadow criminals. We have to resist the evil with or without weapons.
Well, people oversimplify this, but let me explain. The New World Order uses any fraternal organization or system to influence, peddle, and to be able to control populations. And so people say, well, it's the Vatican, or it's the Zionist, or it's the this, or it's the that. No, I mean, we've got the Protestant leaders calling for a New World Order. And Pat Robertson's calling for a New World Order, and calling for global taxes and global warming. But yes, they use the Masons, especially in Europe and England. This is mainline news. Anybody can Google it. Where there's not a judge or a barrister, basically, who isn't a Mason. They're allowed to commit crimes, and they get away with it. And so people then out of hand say the Masons aren't involved at any level of this. And they argue about which group's in control. Definitely the high-level Masons in England and Scotland and Ireland, especially in the UK and the United Kingdom, they are the mid-level management group. There are groups above them. But for people to say that the Masons aren't interfacing and aren't being used, it's just not true.
They are used, it's for sure. I met them several occasions. So I know they are the evil. So thanks for listening to me. Hey.
How long have you been listening from Norway?
I've been listening in a couple of months.
Is that a right translation to say hail or hello, skull?
Hey or hello?
Yeah, how do you say that?
What? Hello?
Yes, sir, but I'm asking you in Norwegian, how do you say hello? Like hi.
Yeah. You can say hello. Almost. Yeah, and we say hi.
Which one of the Norse languages do they say skull? Skull.
Skull. Norwegian. If you take a drink, yes, you can say skull.
It means like cheers.
Cheers. Yeah.
Skull
yes,
from
yes.
Texas.
Yes.
Hey, cattle die and kinsmen die.
Yeah.
But I know one thing that never dies, the fame of a dead man's deed.
Yes.
Skull, Thor, skull.
Yes.
Take care, my friend. Skull to liberty, skull to freedom. Wanted to make sure I was getting that right. All right. I'm going to start. Let's play the Joseph Stiglitz clip again. Again, playing the part of the good liberal against the IMF and World Bank raping the third world. He calls for the global consortium, when the banks that he's talking about are the ones that orchestrated all this, a global authority. Our Federal Reserve already is owned by the Bank of England, a global authority. This is MSNBC. Listen carefully.
a global reserve currency rather than having the whole system depend on the dollar goes up, goes down, has a good president, has a bad president. A global reserve currency, Keynes talked about that. A global regulator. It's clear that America exported its toxic mortgages all around the world. People thought they could trust American regulation. Obviously, they couldn't. But it's very difficult for every country to look at what goes on in every other country in a world of globalization. America couldn't function if we had to rely exclusively on state regulation as a national economy. So you need a global regulator. You need to do something about global competition authority. One of the problems is that we have these institutions that are too big to fail, but these are global institutions. Iceland, small economy, had banks that were, in some sense, bigger than that economy, but that's the nature of globalization. So we need to have some kind of global oversight on these financial institutions. I think we need regulations about transparency, about disclosure, but also about incentive structures, because what we are seeing is the predictable consequences of...
There you go. They engineer all this, and then they pose as the saviors. I mean, it's just amazing. We're going to come back and get into the carbon tax, get into Barack Obama and John McCain, where they stand on this, and their secret police units. They're going to have youth brigades, arrogant, power-tripping 18 to 20-year-olds in uniforms. It's openly being announced. Right, bona fide resistance right here, tip of the spear. Thank you for joining us. Front lines in the info war. What if I say I will never surrender? Well, you got to know who the enemy is first and what their battle plan is, and we do. You got to take action. Are you? You've got to ask yourselves, what's your identity? What do you stand for? And are you living what you supposedly stand for? You will become what you envision standing for if you just simply take action. We are what we do. We are our deeds, ladies and gentlemen. All right. There's a bunch of clips. Here is one with Barack Obama on PBS where he says, we're just going to shut down the coal companies. You know, they can build a coal plant if they want, but the taxes are going to be so high on it, the carbon tax for the carbon dioxide, that, by the way, is good for the earth and plants, and they put out more oxygen. All the studies show that. He says, we're going to shut them down. We're going to run them out of business. We're going to bankrupt them. This is only one of thousands of taxes they're openly announcing. Here it is.
First, it was this YouTube clip from Joe Biden.
We're not supporting coal.
Now, another coal controversy for the Obama campaign after an audio tape from January surfaced online.
So if somebody wants to build a coal-powered plant, they can. It's just that it will bankrupt them because they're going to be charged a huge sum for all that greenhouse gas that's being emitted.
Senator Obama is talking about his cap and trade proposal to cut down global warming. He's maintaining...
Again,
he's
notice how... That's even a neocon site. They just have to go along and say global warming's real. We're having a record cold winter because the sunspots have stopped. The sun cooled down. Huh. Yeah, Mars suddenly, its ice cap's getting bigger instead of getting smaller. Your SUV isn't doing that, and coal plants aren't doing it. Now, here's another clip of him talking about changing our lifestyles with these taxes. And they state that's what it is. Serfdom, making you so poor, you can't educate yourself, you don't have any freedom. This is the new global system. Here it is.
Following up on Mike's question, you've earned a reputation in the campaign for sometimes saying things that people don't want to hear. I mean, I remember you calling teachers, saying merit pay might need to be on the table in America. You told peace activists that, no, we may in fact have to spend more to rebuild a military.
Stop right there. See what he's going to do? More war, more military, cutting teachers' pay. Ha! Liberal! Go ahead and keep playing it.
He told peace activists that, no, we may in fact have to spend more to rebuild a military that's been wrecked in Iraq. You just mentioned going to Detroit and telling. Right. Give me some examples of what you will tell Americans that we don't necessarily want to hear.
Well,
number one, we're going to have to start doing a better job of conserving on energy.
Hit pause. Notice how slick he is. Leaving your lights on, driving big cars. Folks, it doesn't matter if you drive a tiny car, 20 horsepower. It doesn't matter if you live in a tiny house with one light bulb. You're going to get charged more. But he plays class warfare here. Listen to it.
Number one, we're going to have to start doing a better job of conserving on energy. Americans like to drive their big SUVs. They like to leave all the lights on in their house. We're going to have to change our habits. If we want to deal with climate change, which I think we have to deal with, we're seeing already down in the southeast, I mean, they're seeing drought that they haven't seen in a very long time. Western states, same problem.
Look at that. Hit pause. There's always droughts. There's always floods. There's always hurricanes. There's always typhoons. Look at, I mean, just total witch doctor behavior. Oh, look, well, you know, you're not giving into the government gods, and so you're going to be destroyed. And then we're going to come back where he finishes up about controlling our behavior, manipulating our behavior. We're going to talk about a carbon tax, folks, and what it's going to mean to every single person listening. Oh, by the way, China and India and 160 other countries, no cuts.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Roughly half of the power in this country runs our hospitals, our schools, our homes, our factories, our bowling alleys, our car dealerships, our churches. 49% and growing comes from coal. Now, the first thing Bill Clinton did, and they were planning this way back then, was in 1997 he laid off all of the clean-burning coal in the United States in four states, most of it in Utah, southern Utah. Totally clean, no mercury. They don't care. They say, well, they don't even care if it is clean coal. You can't burn it, or you can't even extract natural gas from it. They have a way of doing that. No, instead the coal-fired plants burn the dirty, mercury-filled stuff, and they're building them all over the United States. Barack Obama comes out and says there's going to be a tax. There's going to be a tax on those power plants. And the uninitiated, I've been listening to them on talk radio the last 2 days, calling the ones defending Barack Obama. Again, I'm not for McCain. We're analyzing both puppets. And they come out and they say, well, good, those are rich, evil companies hurting us with their pollution. Folks, carbon dioxide is not a pollutant. I don't care if they're trying to list it as one. It's what plants breathe. So you need to understand that shutting down coal plants or taxing them, that's going to be tagged on to your power bill. Remember Enron? Some of their internal documents came out in 2001. Remember out in California? They blamed all that on Gray Davis, who was a horrible socialist gun grabber. I'm not a fan of him. The point is, it wasn't about him. Schwarzenegger came out and said, he's evil. He's the reason you got charged a couple billion dollars a day for months on end, extra for your power. Meanwhile, Schwarzenegger had been meeting at the Beverly Hills Hotel with the heads of Enron and others, and he was all involved in it. Just so incredible. But he came into office, you know, against what had happened with the energy. And Enron, in its own memos that came out later, would turn the power off every day, a couple hours, just to panic the public, because their internal psychological studies showed the public would then panic and accept doubling and tripling of power prices. And it turned out Enron had no problem supplying energy. They were just trading all the energy coming into California through the lines. And they would bring in members of Congress and the legislature in California and federally, and he later became Secretary of the Army, White, but he was the head of it there in California. They would show them fake computer screens. You know, fake data. Wasn't even real energy. They were just setting the price every day and cheating everybody. Billions a day! during those summer months. Billions. See, it's artificial scarcity. So they're getting you ready, and they're saying you're not going to have as much power. You're going to pay a lot more for it. You're going to pay more for everything. And then here's the key that no one wants to talk about with these global greenhouse taxes. Let's say carbon dioxide's deadly poison. Plants don't breathe it. It's horrible. Let's ban it. By only having Western Europe and the United States and Japan going online with this, it will accelerate what's left of our industry to China, to India, to Mexico, and 160-plus other nations where they will have zero emissions controls. In China, they don't even put filters. You know, here they put filters on the power plants, and it's pretty clean, comparatively. There, nothing, just black smoke going up. That's why the skies were black, and they wore a mask in the Olympics. So see, it's a total scam, even if you believe it's real. Because it's going to increase, because the industry will move there, it will increase the carbon dioxide. You understand? Again, basic logic. But the people fighting against this don't know how to use that, because they regurgitate what the media tells them. We'll be right back.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
I want to continue with your phone calls, your take on the economy, the global carbon taxes being set up by the private banks, the election tomorrow. But we wanted to get him up with Kevin Booth last Friday. He was unable to make it back to his office. We've got him for the next 20 minutes or so, and we're going to let him go. He's Ethan Nadelman. He is a very, very prominent person for the end of marijuana prohibition. He's the founder and executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance, a New York City-based nonprofit organization working to end the war on drugs. He is considered one of the most outspoken advocates of drug legalization. And again, he's got a PhD and other degrees from Harvard University, a master's degree in international relations from London School of Economics, on and on and on. And he's one of the most prominent people out there exposing this fraud. And just out of the gates, Mr. Nadelman, bottom line, from history and the view of history I have from studying it, the British learned how to take down China by shipping in drugs to an area that, where it was illegal, to corrupt the police, corrupt the local system. We know the majority of narcotics are shipped in by groups controlled by the U.S. government, laundered through U.S. banks. But that's not enough for them. And then they get the drug profits on the ground when young people and others are involved in the crime of using it or distributing it or other folks. But with the case of marijuana, what you've got 80%+ of drug users, illegal drug users, only use marijuana. So it's essential to keep cannabis illegal so that they can continue their whole phony war on drugs and put millions of innocent nonviolent offenders behind bars to work in the private prisons. So I wanted to throw out my view and see if you concurred with that and then talk about this important initiative that will have international, not just national, implications going on in California.
Yeah, well, let me break into three pieces. The first one is about the whole international traffic. You know, on the one hand, it's true that the intelligence agencies, the CIA, have been involved with drug trafficking in one way or another for the last 50 or 60 years. It was true in Southeast Asia in the 1960s and 1970s. It was true in Afghanistan and Southwest Asia in the 80s, true in Mexico, Central America, all of that as well. So that's a long and old story, and there's a lot of truth to it. But it's also true that even if the intelligence agencies were squeaky clean, even if they were never involved the slightest bit, you would still have these drugs coming into the country. That basically marijuana, cocaine, heroin, whatever, these are global commodities markets. This stuff is going to be produced wherever, it's going to be sold wherever, it's going to be trafficked wherever. And, you know, whether it's legal or illegal, think about these drugs the same way we would it, like coffee, tobacco, sugar, alcohol, whatever, right? So I think it's important to understand that notwithstanding the government involvement, that when push comes to shove, the real problem is not about that government corruption, that government involvement. The real problem is an incredibly repressive, punitive system within the United States that's relying overwhelmingly on systems of incarceration to deal with people who use drugs. And that's why you see the prison population going from 50,000 people for drug law violations in 1980 to 500,000 people tonight. We have more people on drug charges than all of Europe locks up for everything, and they got more people than we do. So, you know, we're talking about a system of oppression, which is what we're trying to challenge in California.
Well, you're absolutely right, and just the fact that we have to pay for all this, and then a lot of good old boys say, good, make them criminals work. They're working for 20 cents an hour on average, displacing our jobs and our wages.
I mean, the most horrible thing in California right now is that if you look at who's, we have a ballot, just so I can tell your listeners, it's called Proposition 5. If you're in California, make sure you vote yes on Prop 5 tomorrow. But it will be the biggest reform of prisons and sentencing in the history of the country, and the biggest drug reform since the repeal of alcohol prohibition, if it wins tomorrow, right? This thing would essentially reduce the California's bloated, overcrowded prison population by up to 20,000 nonviolent offenders. It would shift $1 billion a year from the prison side of things to the treatment and rehabilitation. It would save taxpayers $2.5 billion because new prisons would not need to be built, right? This is a win-win-win across the board. Helps people get their lives together, reduces crime, reduces recidivism, and the problem right now is that we're at risk of losing this thing because the prison guards unions and their buddies in the alcohol industry and the Indian casino tribe industry and, you know, Meg Whitman, the former chairperson of EBA advising John McCain, have put $3.5 million to run these duplicitous ads across the state of California.
And we've got all these liberal poverty pimps, fake liberals, running around telling everybody that it'll release rapists and murderers, using total deception on the public because they have to.
Well,
they know the public is for decriminalization of marijuana, so they have to lie.
Well, by the way, and Prop 5 does include a provision in there that would reduce the penalty for possessing a joint from a misdemeanor down to an infraction like a traffic ticket. California police arrested something like 50,000 people last year on marijuana charges, so this would make a huge difference as well. But, you know, here you have Jerry Brown, right? Jerry Brown, who's been a progressive at times in his past, and he is featured now in a statewide, or at least in an ad campaign, paid for by the Prisons Guards Union with almost $1 million, basically a puff piece for him, condemning Prop 5 in ways that are inaccurate and hopefully ineffective.
And then we have one of the state senators, federal senators, doing that.
Oh, yeah, Dianne Feinstein. So sad. I think there's never been a mandatory minimum penalty that she didn't love, so far as I can tell. She's up there saying that this will cost taxpayers money when the California Legislative Analyst Office says it'll actually save taxpayers money. She's saying that criminals are going to be running the streets with this thing when, in fact, there's tons of accountability in this thing. What people really don't like, what the people in the prison industrial complex really don't like about Prop 5 is that it holds not just people involved in crime accountable. It holds them accountable. It says, let's see the results of what you're doing. Let's see, when the state prison budget has gone from $5 billion in the year 2000 to $10 billion now, doubled in just the last 8 years, and it continues going up, when the prison guards union's membership has risen something like sixfold since the 1980s, when you see that type of just endless spending to lock up more and more people on a system which is obviously broke, and then when there's a proposal to change it, you see the prison industrial system rallying around and making sure all the politicians line up with them. That's what's so sad about the
current system
right now.
We're talking to Ethan Nadelman. Look, just a few days ago in California, there was the case of a schizophrenic psycho stomping a baby for over 30 minutes to death in the street. The public stood there sucking their thumbs and didn't go defend the child. The police couldn't respond because they were too busy literally out-busting potheads. And there's cases like that, just like in Dallas, Texas, in places they won't respond. In California, they won't respond to car thefts or home invasions, but they will to marijuana. I mean, 50,000 arrests, all the man hours, all the time, the jail and prison space, the courts being clogged up. We've got to decriminalize.
Well, exactly. I mean, part of what we were saying is that part of this initiative increases the length of parole for truly violent offenders. You know, most ordinary Americans want the law enforcement system focusing on the truly predatory and violent people who live in our society. People understand that, you know, you need prisons for a reason. And part of that reason is that there are some people who just will not abide by basic rules of civilization, who cannot be trusted not to take advantage of their fellow citizen. But then you're filling the prisons with people with nonviolent offenses, especially just drug offenses, people whose only offense is putting a substance into their body or having a drug addiction, people who are trying to get their lives together, and all the system wants to do is to spend tons of money locking them up rather than spending half the money to help people get their lives together. I mean, that's what's just so pathetic about this whole thing right now. You know, I mean, I'm hoping there's a broader shift in this country, but I look at these characters in California now and what they're doing and the way they're ripping off the taxpayers and just continuing the same old bankrupt policies, and of reminds me of those guys and how we got into the whole, you know, mortgage and banking crisis the last few years. The system is set up to insulate itself from any sort of outside critical analysis. It's self-reinforcing. And ultimately, it's the taxpayers and citizens who pay the burden on this thing. You know, when you look, for example, at the issue of marijuana, we know at this point 800,000 Americans getting arrested each year for marijuana, 90% of them for nothing more than but drug possession. I mean, that's ludicrous. And now, you know, spending $10 to $20 billion a year enforcing the laws against marijuana at the same time we could be earning in tax revenue that amount of money.
And helicopters flying around with infrared, looking through our walls, looking for
exactly.
people.
Exactly. You know, there are people who don't give a damn about marijuana, people who hate marijuana, in fact, and they say call off the war on marijuana because we fundamentally care about preserving the Bill of Liberties.
Well, how many of these cops, I mean, a large portion of the population has smoked pot at one time in their life. I mean, I've smoked it, you know, before. Mm-hmm. The whole point is, and I didn't inhale, by the way, but mm-hmm. I don't particularly like it, but my point is that how can these cops arrest kids for marijuana when they know they smoked it?
Well, you know, I mean, where's the obstacle to being hypocritical about this thing? How many politicians, you know, how many politicians do you have who, you know, who did this stuff in the past, but they don't mind going after people in the future? My hope with Barack Obama is, you know, he did smoke marijuana, even used cocaine, and he's actually talked in favor of decriminalization, even if he's backtracked away from using that word because it's not politically possible.
I got
to
say, that's about the only good thing Barack Obama has ever said or done, other than claiming he'd try to end the war, and now he's reneged on that.
Well, we'll see how he is as president. I'm feeling more, I mean, compared to what we've been through for the last 8 years, I am at least feeling some sense of optimism, some sense of hope, if only because you got to have some hope at some point around this stuff. You know, I think the people he'll appoint will be better than we've seen in the past. I think the whole drug war will shift into a different direction. Will be more emphasis on health, more emphasis on civil liberties, less on building up the prison industrial complex ever and ever. You know, Alex, listen, I actually got to run in about a minute because I got to keep running on this campaign because the election is tomorrow.
Oh, that's perfect. Fire out the website for your organization.
Thank you. It's drugpolicy.org. Please go to drugpolicy.org. We're the leading organization in the country of people who think the drug war is a bad idea. We believe in decriminalization, health approaches, putting that legalization debate out there. So please help us. Please join us. The only way this drug war ends is if we become a truly powerful mass movement. Thank
absolutely, absolutely. Thank you so much for joining
us. Okay, Alex, take care. Sorry I couldn't be on last week.
Oh, no, I understand. Thanks for being on with us. Okay, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, huge breaking news from Paul Watson. I finally watched the Seventh Tower conspiracy over the weekend, the BBC whitewash they put out a few months ago. I'd watched some of it months ago, but I watched the whole thing. Unspeakable deception, unspeakable lies, unspeakable twisting. And I called Paul this morning with a long list of things I wanted him to write about in his own points. And he said, well, okay, I'll get that out soon, and I'm working on another 9/11 story. And then I didn't really ask him what it was. This is massive. Up on PrisonPlanet.com right now. Ex-CIA man warned top executives to leave New York on 9/11. Report. Warner Brothers senior executive told staff something big is going to happen that day. Get out of town. Now, see, we need to dovetail this with the Offutt Air Force Base in Nebraska, where the hundreds of CEOs met that morning in a secret meeting with Warren Buffett and George Bush. Why do they want to shut down the alternative media on the internet? Why do they want to force you on internet too? Because they can't allow stories like the fact that BBC reported Building 7 fell before it did to get out. They can't allow more and more whistleblowers and information to come out. We are kicking their hind end, thank God. Now, I'm about to cover this new story with Paul Watson that he's got up on PrisonPlanet.com. But what backs this up is that, remember, it was called a conspiracy theory in the media, but all the original articles in MSNBC and in Haaretz and others reported, and Odigo, the instant message company, they're the ones that said it, showing that, I'm not saying they're involved, they got the warnings, they went public, they said, we were told get our people out 4 hours before it happened, we sent out this text message saying get out of the buildings, they're going to be attacked. Haaretz, Jerusalem Post. MSNBC reported that the Arab kids, the Jewish kids, the people in the community, the buildings were half empty at that time of morning for what they were, you know, usually had in them. You had all the insider trading leading back to the CIA and FBI, and people went to some FBI just went to prison for that. Then you had that Offutt Air Force Base meeting hours before. Over 200 CEOs are told, come to a secret meeting to meet with Warren Buffett and the president at this hangar, and then Bush flies there later in the day to get them out of the buildings. Most of them had been based in the buildings. No one knows what was said in that meeting. This all happened. So this new story dovetails with all of that. Ex-CIA man warned top executives to leave New York on 9/11 report. Warner Brothers senior executive told staff something big is going to happen that day. That fits in with what everybody else was saying. And FEMA running a drill the night before and the day of, Tripod 2, Paul, add all this. Tripod 2 of an attack on the World Trade Center complex in Building 7. Paul Watson, tell us about the latest piece of the puzzle.
Hello, Alex. Yeah, this is out of Foreign Policy Journal, which is an alternative news website, but a very credible one from what I can see, run by Jeremy R. Hammond, who's written this article and got this source, which is basically an anonymous source, which is to remain anonymous, who worked under a managing director as number two at a European branch of Warner Brothers. And it was his boss who was close friends with another senior executive for Warner Brothers who worked in the head office in LA and who had also formerly worked for the CIA. And the story goes that there was a funeral service for a senior executive, senior director for Warner Brothers from a foreign office who had died, and they were doing the memorial service arrangements. But this, when the date of September 11th, 2001 was brought up to this LA executive, he rejected it because he told his staff, quote, something big is happening that day, and the top executives from the New York office would all be traveling out of the city. And then when the source was pressed, it was stressed that the big, you know, the something big that was happening, the reason why they'd be out of the city was nothing to do with a corporate meeting or anything. It was a different kind of event that was going to happen on 9/11. And this guy from his CIA sources had passed this message on to his staff, and some of them were out of the city on that day.
Now, regardless, and this is a good journal putting this out. We've seen a lot of great reports from in the past that have panned out. Regardless, we need to go back and focus what went on at Offutt Air Force Base. Hundreds of CEOs that they called away from the towers to go there, and this dovetails with what you're reporting, what this journal's reporting, that they were told to be out of the city that day.
Exactly. The towers were at low occupancy. Obviously, a lot of people were evacuated, but, you know, at 9 a.m. on a Tuesday morning, the original estimates were that there were 50,000 people in those towers. Obviously, we know that, what was it, around 2,000 died. A lot were evacuated, but still low occupancy for the peak time.
Yeah, there was about 10,000 in the building. About 8,500 got out.
Right, even though the usual occupancy is around 50,000, from what I remember being reported.
Yeah, let me go back. It could hold 50, but they were down to about 30,000. But generally, by that time, they reported about 30,000 would generally be there.
Right.
So you've got about a third there.
The occupancy of the airlines is completely below.
Well, every plane was exactly 22% on a day when it was, what, 89% occupancy on the East Coast.
Flying into New York at peak time, yeah. And then obviously, Newsweek reported in its September 13th issue that top brass Pentagon officials cancelled their travel plans the very night before, and that was reported out in the open.
And they cited a security threat on New York and Washington.
Yeah.
Just another piece of the puzzle. Paul, stay there. Let's do five more minutes on this key report. If we brainstorm together and add all the other little key information blurbs into this piece so people can make up their own decisions.
Quite some time I've been sitting it out. Didn't take no chances. Yeah.
you ask for. When you say, deal me in, a lot of people get tricked into serving the New World Order. A lot of people want power. They're competitive. They're slowly being manipulated into positions where they make decisions that destroy their lives and the lives of countless others. You can do whatever you want to yourself. For God's sakes, don't hurt others unless you're defending yourself. And then make it quick. Don't take any pleasure in having to crush a fellow human. Coming straight on for you. You made my mind. As things become darker, the warnings we put out, the information we've disseminated, the seeds we planted will grow. Materials, DVDs, films, books, information you have will become even more precious. Don't count on the internet being here next week or next month or next year. Take the information off prisonplanet.tv, burn it to disk. Create libraries of the thousands of pieces of media there. Give them to your neighbors, your friends, your family. Save them. It's an important testament that as things get worse, people down the road will be shocked when they listen to these shows, when they watch the films. People you never thought would have woken up, when they're in true bondage, will. That's the sad part about it. As Winston Churchill rightfully said, there may come a time when you are forced to fight when you have a good chance of winning. But still more often in history, people wait and don't resist. I'm paraphrasing. So a time comes and they decide to fight when it's a tough fight and they don't have a very good chance of winning, but it's better than dying on their knees as slaves. But then there's a third, even worse position. And that's having to stand and fight when you have no chance of winning. Because at least the human spirit still beats in your heart and soul, and you're not going to go quietly into the night. A lot of times that's the one you fight the hardest, isn't it? Are you going to wait until there's almost no chance of winning? Or are you going to stand up and speak out now? That is the challenge. That is the Great Commission against evil. All right, Paul Watson, I'm going to get to some calls, cover a bunch of the news. I know you're busy with a piece, and there's so many hundreds of things. I mean, each 10-minute clip on YouTube of the Seventh Tower conspiracy, they've got, as outside experts, Demolition, Control Demolition Incorporated, involved in covering Oklahoma City and 9/11. They act like they're impartial outsiders in the film. They even get one of our people, you know, to go, oh, I didn't think it was a big deal that Building 7, you know, that they reported it fell beforehand, but, you know, people in our movement, they made a big deal out of it. Poor guy, I didn't know why everybody always wants to interview him, because he does that kind of stuff. But people think they're friends with the mainstream media. It doesn't work that way. And, you know, they've got things in there about how the whole front of the building was knocked off. When that's not true, that lie is regurgitated. And just countless lies. Paul's doing a story on that. But this false flag scripting, like when they said that Lee Harvey Oswald had killed John F. Kennedy with three shots from the book depository, that was published in Asia, in Australia, New Zealand, Thailand, a bunch of places, hours before he was even captured and his name was released. I mean, that's smoking gun and that's important. They try to say, oh, no, that's not important. Oh, no, that's not important. It's not important at all to have cops saying, get back, they're going to bring it down, it's coming down. And witnesses saying they had countdowns. And, you know, when we have secret sources, people say, oh, you don't have a secret source. And it comes out, it's Barry Jennings. They threaten, harass him. He didn't fully recant. He just said, I said they looked like bodies, felt like bodies. They tried to say that was a lie. They try to make me look like a fool. And, of course, he's dead now. And they also say that Jennings was in the building 3 hours. That's not true. He wasn't in 3 hours. His key testimony, they just overlooked that there were explosions and the building was blown in before Tower 1 or 2 fell. And he said, that's my story. I'm sticking to it. But they edited it to where it looks like he's saying the opposite. Incredible deception. But, Paul, when is that story coming out?
I'm working on it, Alex. I needed to get this CIA warning one out first.
Well, I've read your article, and it's excellent, but I would just add all those other points about Minot, about the Odigo people warning, and say, here it is, Israeli newspapers, not us. You know, I mean, I've had mainstream media here in my office over and over again. Why are you anti-Semitic, saying Israel, that all the Jews are out of the building? And I say, I'm not. Any more than the Jerusalem Post and Haaretz is, they got the warning and told their people to get out of the building, and it wasn't all the Jews. It was the Odigo employees. You know, I'm sick of it. Any more than we're saying Warner Brothers is involved in the attack. You know, we know the facts. Go ahead.
The thing about it is that a lot of these so-called debunking websites will still try and claim that things are absolutely verifiably proven and admitted to by the authorities, such as the Palestinian boy at the new Utrecht High School in Brooklyn who, on September 6th, 5 days before the attack, looked out of his classroom window, pointed towards Lower Manhattan and the Twin Towers and said, do you see those buildings? They won't be standing there next week.
And he was cited and got in trouble at the principal's office. It's on record.
Yeah, that's just one of many.
And we're not saying, we're not being anti-Semitic against Palestinians. We're just reporting what was in the news.
And they still say it's an urban myth about these things, and reporters have had to write reports emphasizing again and again it's not an urban myth, it's being admitted to by the FBI. I just hope this story gets more attention than all the disinformation that's out there, which infuriates me on an almost daily basis. You know, we've got this claptrap going around about the Bush family being arrested by the Justice Department or whatever. This video of Bush walking across the White House lawn yesterday.
And then the media can point at that and say, see, this, the Internet's disinformation. It's clearly Photoshopped and totally fake video, just like right. The Bin Laden tapes are fake. He's been arrested by Delta Force in Paraguay. All made up.
Total crap. Like, the story 3 weeks ago, all the ATMs are going to close. You're not being, all the banks are going to close.
And we told you that was bull, and then we were attacked.
Total bull.
By a known FBI informant, Mr. Baloney Head.
And yet people still give these websites credence, and we'll have to be, you know, we'll be getting emails next week about some new bull they come out with, and nobody ever points to the fact that they've been caught lying in every instance.
Well, then they announced the Solicitor General's wife was arrested in France, so there's shootouts in the underground in Chicago. I mean, it's always the same people. I mean, it's like the Catholics run it all, Kingpin. He says spaceships dropped black magic bombs to blow up Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and his followers attack me and say, yes, it was black magic bombs. I mean, you know, clearly operatives.
And it's this kind of, you know, zealous focus and obsession with these issues that can't be proven when we've got bona fide, solid issues that can be proven, and sometimes people just aren't interested.
And
give credence to their bull, it's the kid's kind of misplaced aggression towards us. It's just a mental illness.
Well, Paul, a lot of people aren't even going to read your full article. Can you put at the top all the warnings, the Palestinians, the Israelis, the Minot,
It is in there, yeah.
No, I know a lot of it's in there, but I mean, they won't even read that deep.
But did you hear about this one as well? Across the country, they're giving out free flu vaccinations for people who vote.
Yeah.
Training people to line up and take the shot. It's called Vote and Vax.
Oh, it's total brainwashing. They show up at the local radio station we broadcast out of on Sundays, and we have free ones. We love you. Free injections. And I tell people, I go, you know, the last 6 years, they haven't even gotten the right mutation. They have to guess what it's going to be, and it didn't even help you. And here's all these studies of Alzheimer's, and they just roll their sleeves up with glee. God,
exactly.
I mean, to know we have total criminals running things, and then we're all a bunch of well-meaning, trusting morons going along with it. Oh, man.
The report
talk about that on Infowars.net right now. But, yeah, getting back to it, I mean, you had the warning for Willie Brown, San Francisco mayor, who was going to fly into New York on the morning of 9/11. He gets a call from, quote, airport security, late September 10th, advising him of a security threat, and he cancels his flight. Where did the investigation go into that? Then you've got all the put options on United and American Airlines, speculation that the stock would go down, and, you know, this is right after all the media was reporting, quote, airline stock set to fly. So you've got all these, of course, that led up to the CIA and its, you know, Brown Deutsche Bank and Buzzy Krongard.
Well, the bigger issue is we need Minot in here. We need to report that, hey, why do these 200 and something, we got to pull, I think it's 220 something, but pull it up. Why did they get told, come to a secret meeting at the base to meet Warren Buffett? And then most of them worked in the towers.
Right.
I mean, how obvious does this have to get? And you know, the biggest piece of 9/11 evidence that's an inside job is that the criminals that run our government, they've done this over and over. They've been caught running terror attacks. It's admitted they staged them. You know what? Add a link to that 2004 Army training manual that's a reprint of the 70s that's on WikiLeaks. People don't believe it. The news has reported it is real, mainstream news has, where they teach Army captains how to stage false flag attacks. Will you post that in there, too?
Yeah.
You know, I've been reporting on 9/11 since before it happened, and I just, Paul, it's just so incredible. I mean, we have got some really bold people running things, and God knows what they're going to pull out of the hat next time. I mean, they're gearing everybody up for nuke attacks, bioweapon releases. And
well, we know that Powell, Bede, and Albright, and now today, or yesterday on CNN, the big new Brzezinski, Trilateral Commission co-founder, said that Obama, and of course Brzezinski's Obama's one of his top advisors, says that he's going to have an imminent problem in the area of foreign policy after he's elected president. So again, echoing what Biden said, in which he promised and he guaranteed, mark my words, he said, he was so vehement about it, that Obama would have an international crisis on his hands within 6 months.
And it's going to be unpopular what he has to do. We already have the globalists through Georgia sneak attacking the Russians, more insanity. And I had people calling me a traitor saying, no, Georgia was snuck attack, when now even the State Department admits it was staged by Georgia. They're just claiming that they weren't involved. And then, of course, why is no one questioning Powell? He said, on the 21st or 22nd, there will be a huge international event, a crisis. He can name the date but won't say what it is? I mean, it's just an insult to everybody's intelligence, Paul.
Exactly. I mean, both Clinton and Bush faced, you know, the test within their first few months of coming into office. Clinton had the first World Trade Center bombing. Bush had 9/11. So, you know, what's Obama going to have? I dread to think what they've got lined up for this time, because it could be even bigger.
Oh, man. Well, we got a lot of election reporting going on. We'll be reporting on election fraud tomorrow, and, of course, throughout the week, Bev Harris and others coming on. We'll be taking your calls dealing with any type of election fraud or anything you've been seeing go on in your area. Paul, we got you. We got Kurt Nimmo. We got your brother Steve. We got Aaron. We've got to get more writers, but to find writers that actually know what's going on and are accurate in their world analysis. This stuff's also clear. I don't know how they aren't. We need more stories about web censorship's already begun. The global taxation, the big banks openly announcing world currency run by the banks, and you'll pay carbon taxes to them. It's all happening. We were right. And I don't have the staff to go back and find all the videos and audios we've done, but people finally are finding them themselves. I was watching a clip of Matrix of Evil this morning, and you know, from 2003, and there I was talking about how that Bush would do all this evil, he'd be reelected, then we'd get a liberal who would bring in the carbon tax and demonize America, and I laid out how the banks would take over and how they would implode the economy and then set up a world banking structure. I mean, again, It's all in the government documents. I mean, they're going to hurt all folks. They're taking the bailout money and giving themselves bonuses and giving us none of it. You know what this means? They don't care anymore, Paul.
Exactly. And on the subject of the carbon tax, you had the World Wildlife Fund last week coming out and saying basically that America is the chief offender in terms of carbon emissions, and they applauded the countries for keeping within their, quote, biocapacity. And those countries are the likes of Malawi and Afghanistan. And then today you've got a climate bill in Parliament, which I believe has passed.
It passed.
80% reduction in carbon dioxide emissions by 2050. Basically what that means is almost all the cars off the roads and 80% of the little industry that we've got left completely shut down. That's a third world country.
Well,
that's,
they're also saying humans, the New York Times reported, humans have to be reduced because we exhale carbon. Don't you see the trick? Don't you get the scam, folks? It's what the Club of Rome said in 91, the head of the CFR, Richard Inhofe. This is to wage war against humanity. It is to make us the enemy. Folks, carbon dioxide is mother's milk to the planet. Oh, man.
I mean, the final jokes. But, you know, they've changed global warming to climate change now because you've got record low temperatures in dozens of U.S. states. The Arctic just expanded its ice sheet the size of Germany for 2008, 30%. And they're citing reports from 2007 without pointing out the fact.
Meanwhile, I was watching TV last night. They showed polar bears drowning again, Paul. You can't make it up.
Because polar bears can't swim, can they?
They treat us like idiots! And again, they have George Bush come out against global warming, so everybody knows he's bad, so, oh, it must be real. See how they play the left right off against you? Now the left will do all this evil, and Republicans will propose bad stuff, and Republicans will then support it, thinking, oh, they're fighting it. Paul Watson, good job. Continue on, my friend, at PrisonPlanet.com and InfoWars.net.
Thanks, Alex.
Evil carbon person. See if the Iranians get this phone hooked up so I can be on international television. If not, we'll continue taking phone calls. People holding will find out in the next 5 minutes. Speaking of Iran, up on PrisonPlanet.com, we've got this Lou Dobbs clip where they talk about the U.S. government funding millions of dollars to a Russian institute that's building the Bushehr reactor. Now, that is for peaceful uses, but it can be used for nukes. The whole point is, Dobbs says it's all incompetence, and the government's just a bunch of idiots. No, that's not it. It was England, Israel, and the United States that helped give them real components that can be used for nukes, and Pakistan through AQCon Laboratories. And it was Donald Rumsfeld, the head of the big Swiss company, that transferred the systems for nuke reactors, for weapons, to the North Koreans in 1997. So, again, it's always far worse than even what you're hearing and what you're being told. They hand out these weapons, like Bill Hicks said, like in the old Westerns, where they, in front of the little goat herder kid, you know, 12-year-old, they throw the gun down. The bad guy throws it down at his feet and says, after he killed his daddy, "Pick it up, boy." I said, "Pick up the gun." And that's what they do. They just go out and throw the gun out in front of him. And, "Gee, mister, I don't know. I just wanted some rock candy." Pick up the gun. That is basically what they're doing. Speaking of solutions, ladies and gentlemen, we have an online video and bookstore at InfoWars.com. And I hope you go there, and I hope you get Terror Storm, the definitive work on government-sponsored terror, the history of government-sponsored terror, Endgame, Blueprint for Global Enslavement, Truth Rising, such an amazing film. With the police state, 9/11 truth, all the people going public for 9/11 truth, all the politicians being confronted. What an important work. It won't be seen unless you get it and make copies and get them out to people, just like Fabled Enemies. All available at InfoWars.com or by calling toll-free 888-253-3139. You not only get a tool that'll wake people up. No, my friends. You also fund this operation and what we're doing here. So 888 888- 1-800-253-3139. Or you can simply go to Infowars.com to check out all the books and videos we carry. Not just my 21 films, 20 films I've made, another one I produced. or to be technical, I've made 19 films and produced two. There we go. But all the other books and videos that we carry at Infowars.com. You may know all about the Federal Reserve and the private bankers setting up world government right now. But Money Masters, 3.5-hour film, 2 DVDs, $19.95, Infowars.com. It needs to be seen. 888-253-3139 or write to me, Alex Jones, at 3001 South Lamar, Suite 100, Austin, Texas, 78704. Have we gotten a hold of them yet? Oh, they're calling back. And this always happens. We start about 5 minutes after on Russian and Iranian TV. There's somewhat of a language barrier, but they speak English on the shows. The folks that call speak it, but you can tell they're it's pidgin. Hey, not knocking them. I can't speak Iranian. So they're better than I. So you'll hear me once the show starts. We're just going to skip all the breaks for PrisonPlanet.tv viewers and Infowars.com stream listeners. John won't be back till the end of the show, but for stations, we'll be playing the breaks. So you'll just hear me, John's be playing the music on his end, or fade it down until right at the end, John, because it might get confusing. I'll be on there with a few other people talking about U.S. elections. This is in cable systems in the U.S., cable systems in Europe, cable systems all over the Middle East, Central Asia, Asia, Latin America, millions of viewers. And so we're doing this. I always tell them I'd rather go on their other news shows than aren't during my show, but I guess it's the evening over there, like 9 o'clock at night, so that's when they like to have their guest on. I'm going to be in studio with them later in the week for TV, and the Russians tomorrow. But that is after the show. We'll have continual coverage of the election via London, England when we get back. All right, here's what's happening. I'm going to be on Worldwide Iranian TV via audio. We're visual on our side, live at PrisonPlanet.tv. They just called. The show starts about 4 or 5 after. So they're going to be calling back in the next few minutes. And then I will air them live here, and then they will take control of the interview for this simulcast. And so you'll hear whatever background news is going on. And then as the guest will be interviewed, I will be in the interviewee position here on air. Okay, and so for stations out there, the ads will still play. You just won't be able to hear what's going on Iranian TV. But John will take control from there. And John, I'm going to turn down the ISDN once that happens so that you can be in control from Minnesota. So I'm in Texas. The Genesis Network is in Minneapolis, St. Paul. They're in Burnsville, a suburb to be precise. And we're going to be talking to International Press TV out of London, England, which is satellited back into Tehran. And this is English language, so you'll be able to understand them as soon as they call. And I agreed to do this today. I've said no a few other times because it's always on gold or oil or government terrorism or other subjects. Today it's on U.S. elections, who could win, what happened to third parties, U.S. electoral system, how democratic, the future of U.S. and world under John McCain or Obama, what's at stake, Bush legacy. So that is what we're going to be discussing today on Iranian International Television. And Press TV is on some U.S. cable and satellite systems. Again, it is also on around the world. So that is coming up. And again, you'll be able to watch it all uninterrupted at PrisonPlanet.tv. I have to multitask a lot with what I do to be able to maximize getting the word out. Would I love to go speak in your city or go speak in England or go speak in Croatia or Russia or Japan as I've been invited? Would I love to be able to take my children to the Pacific Northwest and see whales as my wife dreams of doing? Yes. But every day I can sit here in the bunker, reading, researching, doing radio interviews, doing TV interviews, and having a huge effect. And so that's why I'm doing this, and that's why I can't come up to, say, Kansas City, KCXL, invited me up there to speak to crowds. Last time I was there, it was about 1,000 people. I can't do the things I want to do because we are affecting the biggest amount of change here over AM and FM, over the interviews I'm doing, over PrisonPlanet.tv, and with all of you that are taking the audio of this show and putting it all over the internet, on the file sharing networks, everywhere else. Okay, I'm ready to go ahead and go to him. Hello?
Hello, this is Gail from Press TV. How do you do, sir, Mr. Jones?
I am good. I am ready to go live, so I sit here awaiting whenever you guys are ready to go to me.
Yes, the show just started in 4 minutes, sir, so you're ready, I think, but I want to have your brief sound check as usual. So is it okay with you, sir?
Absolutely. I didn't quite make
out.
Thank you.
And if you, thank you. So could you please start counting from 1 to 10 very slowly, sir? Please.
Sure. It's 10. It's 10-9-8-7-6-5-4-3-2-1.
The union is talking.
Thank you. And something else, I put you through the studio. There's the news brief. If you can hear, let me know, sir. Thank you.
Government from power, unless it held direct talks on his demands.
Sounds good.
Could you?
Sounds very good.
Perfect. So you're ready for our show. Have your aggression. Good luck.
Okay. And you were asking if I could be in studio for a video interview on Wednesday. I want to make sure you guys know I'm happy to do that.
Wow. Perfect. So if you want, you can talk with Shida, okay?
Okay.
Our coordinator. So please.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Alex Jones, hi, sir.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for having me on your show.
Fine, thank you. Well, you know, we're so happy for having you on this show. Not just me, like everybody's here is so happy. And the other day I was talking to Mr. Trey, and then I was telling him how wonderful you are and how we really appreciate your being on our shows. Thank you very much.
Well, absolutely. I'm happy to do it. You know, I'm sorry.
Thank you. We really enjoy your comments. And every time you come to one of our shows, I mean, all of us here, we sit down and we watch. Like the last time I remember, it was Four Corners, and like we were all watching it. And it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for having me on. I would love to do it more. Just I'm usually on the radio at this time. But I'm glad that we could do it today. So thank you.
Perfect. Thank you. So please stay with us, and we're going to start the show in about a few minutes.
Okay, thank you. Really nice folks there.
Mr. Alex Jones.
Yes, I'm right here.
By the way, about the show that we have on Wednesday, I have to talk to the transmission department, and then as soon as we know that we'll be able to book a studio, I'll let you know.
Fantastic. Just whenever you need me. Thank you.
Sure. Definitely, I'll let you know.
Thank you.
Welcome to Fine Print, the double scrutiny of the story and its coverage with me, Amir Afros. First, as always, we start with a quick check of the big print. Big print calls.
McCain and Obama in frantic mode during final sprint for votes. McCain and Obama embark on last-ditch tours of swing states. Presidential candidates make appeals in key states. Candidates sprint toward finish line. Obama is up, and fans fear that jinxes it. Obama leads McCain in 6 of 8 key states. Obama in command on eve of U.S. vote. World closely watching U.S. presidential elections. If the world could vote in the U.S. election.
Help us track the fine print. We're joined from London by Dr. James Boyce, Assistant Professor of International Political Studies at Richmond, the American International University in London, and founder of the Resolute Group. From Austin, Texas, we're joined by Wayne Slater, author and senior political writer with the Dallas Morning News, co-author of Bush's Brain, How Karl Rove Made George W. Bush Presidential. By the phone, we're joined from Austin, Texas, again by Alex Jones, investigative journalist, documentary filmmaker, owner of Infowars.com. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. But straight to our first pick, Agence France-Presse, Obama in command on eve of U.S. vote. Barack Obama stooped on the threshold of history on Monday as polls gave the Democrat a solid lead over John McCain on the last day of campaigning for the most dramatic U.S. presidential vote in a generation. But McCain, who has no room for error in the tense battle for a handful of toss-up states, vowed to confound the pollsters and wrench victory from the African-American Obama's grasp on Tuesday. The 47-year-old Democrat stressed the historic nature of his quest to be America's first black president, striking an optimistic tone as fresh polls gave him a wide lead and heaped further pressure on McCain. He said, quote, "This is a defining moment in our history," Obama wrote in an article published Monday in the Wall Street Journal. "Tomorrow, I ask you to write our nation's next great chapter. If you give me your vote, we won't just win this election together. We will change this country and change the world." McCain, a 72-year-old former prisoner of war in Vietnam, was defiant. "My opponent," he said, quote, "is measuring the drapes at the White House," he said, as he wrapped up a frenzied day of campaigning with a midnight rally in Miami. "The Mac is back," he said, quote, "and we're going to win this election." And, of course, the polls give it all to Obama. A new Wall Street Journal NBC News poll put Obama ahead 51% and 43%. CNN's latest poll on Sunday had Obama with a 53-46% edge. Washington Post ABC News poll gave him 54% to 43%. Rasmussen said he was at 51% and McCain's 46%. So let's go straight to Texas. Wayne Slater, take a look at your crystal ball. What do you see?
Well, I think the polls really indicate it's Barack Obama's year. I just got off the plane. I spent almost a week with Barack Obama, before that a week with John McCain. And the Obama campaign is very, very confident. What we're seeing here is a remarkable, not only campaign by Barack Obama, if he happens to win tomorrow, and I think the expectations are he probably will, but we're seeing a redefinition of who votes for Democrats in America. Barack Obama is actually winning right now in some southern states, something that no one has done and no Democrat has done since 1976. 2006 when Jimmy Carter, a fellow Southerner, won. You see Barack Obama challenging in a state like North Carolina, part of the Old South, where 40% of the registered voters have already voted. Most of them are Democrats. And if Barack Obama wins there and in Virginia, as well as the other states that he's expected to pick up, it not only will be a victory for the first African-American, an historic victory, but also a rather astonishing reconfiguration of the electoral map, which shows that the South, long Republican territory, might become part Democrat territory starting tomorrow.
Writers agrees with you. Obama leads McCain in 6 of 8 key states. Democrat Barack Obama leads Republican John McCain in 6 of 8 key battleground states one day before the U.S. election, including the big prize of Florida and Ohio, according to a series of Reuters Zogby polls released on Monday. Alex Jones, your look at your crystal ball, and do you see any surprise, all these polls going Obama?
No, I don't. The incredible support that we're witnessing for Barack Obama in almost every poll, with leads of 10%, many of them, the smallest only about 5%, show that people don't like the policies of George W. Bush. The problem is, and most pundits are predicting a very short honeymoon, including his running mate Joe Biden, for Barack Obama, because he's going to come in, he wants more defense spending, he wants more wars, he wants to go into Afghanistan and expand things. Pakistan, he's for the warrantless, Fourth Amendment destroying, wiretapping, spying on the American people. He's gotten three times the Wall Street money that John McCain has gotten, four times the Goldman Sachs. So he's going to be put in tomorrow by the public's outrage and by a media that's been giving him most of the attention. It's clear that the establishment knows they've ridden their Republican pony as far as they can. They want a new, fresh horse, Barack Obama, to give them left cover, to pacify the left so he can move in, bring in a global carbon tax, acquiesce to the banks who are literally just looting the country of not $800 billion, but trillions of dollars, giving it to themselves and bonuses. Barack Obama is probably going to be elected tomorrow, but he's also going to be a huge disappointment for the American people. You have a lot of conservatives voting for him because they're so sick of George Bush, but you also have about 30% of the U.S. population saying, you know, that they're not totally decided, that they don't like either candidate. You have Congress with an 11% approval rating. Both parties are universally hated now at higher levels than we've ever had in history. And so what's going to happen is Barack Obama is going to come into office probably, 95% chance, I would say. All the polls show that. And then people are going to see that it's a different face, different rhetoric, a better speaker than George Bush, but that the global corporate institutions that control our executive branch are really in control. And so you're going to see a major crisis here in the United States as things intensify.
All right. You covered a lot of ground. We'll be talking about that, the choices American people have, whether or not the two are true agents for change, either Obama or McCain, no other choice, as facts speak for themselves. But New York Times goes, Obama is up, and fans fear that jinxes it. Let's go to Dr. Boyce for his speculation. Plus, do you see any of this jinx? Could be nothing other than the Bratley effect. Do you see the Bratley effect simply people not voting black on election day despite all the polling?
Well, certainly the Bradley effect is something which the Obama campaign are greatly fearing. This idea that people could be saying one thing to the pollsters and something else to themselves in private is certainly got to be fighting away at the heart of darkness at the Obama campaign. I think, however, that as your polls have revealed, there is enough of a gap between the two candidates at this point. There should be sufficient to see Barack Obama coast to victory tomorrow. Whether it will be the landslide, which some people had forecast, I think is unlikely. We will have to wait and see exactly what the figures emerge. But I think it's telling today that we see John McCain very much on the defensive in states that he should have sewn up months ago, and Barack Obama very much on the offensive, campaigning in those states which George Bush took relatively easily in 2004. We see John McCain traveling some 3,000 miles today to try to shore up his base, whereas Barack Obama appears to be taking it relatively easy, traveling just under, by all reckoning, some 700 miles, very much to try to energize the Democrats and get them out to vote.
Wayne, well, of course, we have McCain saying Obama is perhaps measuring the drapes at the White House. Well, he should be, according to the polls. But do you see that Bradley effect, the race factor, changing all the polls come November the 4th, that is hours away?
Yeah, I think Dr. Boyd has it exactly right. If this were a close race, if in fact Barack Obama were leading in the polls in the battleground states and nationally by 1 or 2 percentage points, then I think the potential of the Bradley effect, where people, as he said, might tell a pollster that they would vote for Barack Obama, but secretly when they actually go to vote, would not vote for an African-American, then I think the Bradley effect might have an effect. But all indications are that even though this race is narrowing to some extent, and is expected to narrow in terms of the voter turnout, that the margin of victory by Barack Obama in the key battleground states especially, where he is expected to win by more than 2 or 3 or 4%, probably obviates the Bradley effect here. If that happens, if in fact some voters are going to not vote for him because he is black, there's no question about that, but if he's able to overcome that, it will be a rather remarkable moment in American politics. We had slavery in this country 140 years ago. That's when we abolished it. And now that we have an African-American who could win the presidency of the United States, 140 years since the 15th Amendment, which allowed the former slaves to vote, is an extraordinary moment. So while few Americans may vote against Barack Obama because he is black, the indications are that there is a phenomenon here which is bigger than that, and that it's likely, though I'm not going to predict absolutely, but likely to sweep him into office tomorrow.
All right, let's take a look at this C word of change. Both campaigns have been talking about change. Obama says the change we need, their change is not authentic. And, here is what he wrote, again, in the Wall Street Journal. This is a defining moment in our history. And then he said, tomorrow I ask you to write our nation's next great chapter. If you give me your vote, we won't just win this election together. We will change this country and change the world. Alex Jones, last time Bush said, I'll change the world after 9/11, we see the change. What change does Obama really mean, both inside the U.S. and outside?
Well, there's going to be real change, and it's the exact same change we would have seen with John McCain. These guys on the issues aren't any different. You just get some different rhetoric. And Barack Obama has openly called for a million-person youth corps, youth brigades, out enforcing as intelligence spies. He's called for a 3 million-person environmental squads. He's called for shutting down, quote, bankrupting the coal industry that supplies 49% of all of our power. Yeah, he's going to bring in big government. I mean, he's talking like he's the Messiah. He's running TV ads where he's already sitting in the White House. And so what he's going to bring is a lot of grassroots support just because the public thinks they're getting political change because he looks different. But instead, they're going to get change, the whole George Bush agenda, on steroids. And so that's the bottom line here. That's why you have Barack Obama unpopular on almost every issue. The only reason he is popular with the people is because he's from a different party and they're hoping for some type of real change, and they're not going to get it. What they're going to get is what his running mate called for twice last week, a new world order where the very private banks that have orchestrated the derivatives collapse for a vertical integration, a consolidation, they are now openly calling for a world government run by a select group of banks out of London, England, that will set and control world taxes, world regulations, stock markets. We will buy our carbon credits directly from a private group of central banks. And so that is the change that Barack Obama is talking about. He is talking about bringing in more control, more of the same. That's why he's getting more corporate contributions and more defense contributions and more big money contributions than John McCain. The establishment positioned John McCain to win the Republican primary because they knew they were basically running a political corpse, just like the system ran Bob Dole in 1996 against Bill Clinton. And so we're all talking about, oh, the first black president. While we're all talking about these little side issues, we should, as an American people, talk about the fact that Barack Obama has lied about every major issue. He has turned around and stabbed the American people in the back. He got the nomination claiming he was going to end the spying, end the police state, end the war, and now Biden and others and has come out and said, guess what? We're not going to end any of it, basically. It's going to be very unpopular, but this is what we're going to do. We are going to see more of the New World Order neocon agenda, and we document it all at InfoWars.com and PrisonPlanet.com, and so you're going to see massive resistance form in the next few years after the honeymoon is over, and as the United States goes into this orchestrated depression, you're going to see Barack Obama become incredibly unpopular, and we're going to see all sorts of resistance at every level here in the United States, and that's what I'm concerned about, because the left was all against George Bush and his globalist agenda, but now because Barack Obama is set to be launched in there with this whole messianic vision, talking about he is the one, he is coming to save the earth, Newsweek calling him the president of the world, the whole world saying he's this wonderful, sweet, loving person. If you look at what he really is doing, he's bringing tyranny and an end to the free market, a crony capitalist system where a select group of inner banks and corporations loot the United States, like we saw with Boris Yeltsin and the oligarchs in Russia. The United States is being looted from pillar to post by the transnational criminals. Joseph Stiglitz on CNBC yesterday called for a world government run by the banks. They are coming out against the people.
All right, let's see if James in London agrees.
Well, can I just add, as a political scientist, it's a real honor to be on the show with Wayne Slater tonight. But let me see if I can add some sort of political dimension to that from an international perspective. You're going to hear an awful lot over the next 24 hours and moving in through the interregnum until the inauguration about change. Change is what we've heard from Barack Obama, of course, over the last 22 months or so. But history would dictate that in every presidential election, whilst people talk heavily about change, what you get a great deal of is actually continuity. Any president coming into office is going to be forced to continue a whole raft of issues. And what often changes is the rhetoric. Now, the rhetoric, as I'm sure many people realize, is important. The rhetoric of George Bush really put people's backs up here in Europe, in London, and his whole tone was very aggressive, and his demeanor was seen to be very much at odds with a European perspective. I think Obama, the change he will initiate will be one of tone and of an approach, a much more inclusive, multilateral, almost Clinton-esque, I think, approach to foreign policy, which will be much more in keeping with a European perspective. And as a result, I think, very much ease America's position in the rest of the world vis-a-vis the countries with which it is attempting to form alliances, both militarily and financial. Whoever becomes president has got a series of uphill challenges to face with. One could almost ask, who would want to be president at this point? You've got the war in Iraq, war in Afghanistan, and a financial crisis, which is clearly going to dominate their time in office. So whatever the candidates promise or pledge on the campaign trail, they're really going to face an uphill struggle in just trying to manage on a day-to-day basis. And all these promises about spending and youth movement, I think, will take a secondary place once Obama, if he is installed in the White House, comes to pass.
All right, Wayne Slater. Of course, you've been in the planes of both campaigns, but you have had the chance of being on the planes of the two only major campaigns. Now, we will be talking about the third parties as well, but this change, both are talking about the change. Any difference between the two? If, let's have a preview of the difference. We'll get into the details the second half of the show. Wayne?
We have Wayne.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I thought you were going to break there. No, look, there's going to be a change. Now, it may not be the kind of change that Alex would anticipate, but there's going to be a change. There's a difference between Barack Obama, Democratic Party, this approach, and John McCain. And part of that change, as Alex said correctly, was this nation is sick and tired of George W. Bush, 8 years of the Bush administration, and by extension, the attitude that the rest of the world has about America. Americans don't like it that much of Europe, much of the rest of the world, doesn't particularly have use for us. That the preemption policies with respect to the war of the George Bush administration, the economic policies at home, which both Democrats and Republicans have shared to cause big problems, that all of that together has created an environment for significant change. You're going to see in a Barack, we'll talk, as you say, more specifically later, but we're going to see an approach in terms of an outreach to Europe and the rest of the world that is more robust than we had seen, certainly under the Bush administration. But we're also going to see an effort to deal with the economic crisis in a way that is somewhat more sensitive to middle-income Americans, not simply the wealthy. At the same time, there's going to have to be a recognition that capital in the United States, which was part of the problem in terms of a few greedy operators, is going to have to be tended to. So there's going to be an element of continuity in the way that Barack Obama administration, if there is one, you know, runs the White House. But it's going to be different, its approach internationally, its approach here in the United States. I should say that one area where it will be exactly the same, I think, is if, in fact, Barack Obama is challenged, and Iran is a perfect example of what some Republican conservatives and John McCain and Barack Obama's own running mate suggest could be an early challenge, a testing of this young president. In the event something like that happens, I don't think people ought to be fooled. This president would act pretty much like John McCain would act, George Bush would act, a traditional United States president would act, and that would be very strongly to protect United States interests.
Of course, so we have only just a few seconds left to the end of the first half, but something people haven't heard, over 20 parties, third parties, so-called third parties, running, but even Americans haven't heard the names of most of these, and they do not know the candidates. When we come back, we'll discuss the third parties, why it's only blue and or red, and then the change on the lips of both Barack Obama and his rival, John McCain. We'll be back after a short break.
This hour, Pakistan warns U.S. missile attacks inside its soil can spark a violent backlash. Pakistani officials tell visiting U.S. Commander General David Petraeus missile strikes could severely hamper efforts to curb extremism. Petraeus is the new head of the U.S. Central Command. Iraqi President Jalal Talabani rejects the notion of the U.S. setting up bases in the country's Kurdistan region. Talabani's remarks came after a Kurdish leader said the U.S. military could have bases in the north if Washington and Baghdad failed to sign a security deal. The Democratic Republic of Congo has placed the city of Goma under curfew. The order came after rebel chief Laurent Nkunda threatened to drive the government from power unless it held direct talks on his demands. The government has rejected the rebels' call for direct negotiations. The race for the White House ended its final hours. Polls show Barack Obama holding a solid lead in his historic quest to become the nation's first African-American president. Meanwhile, John McCain is grasping for a last-minute comeback. Wall Street opens on a cautious note a day before the U.S. presidential election. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose by 3%, about 45 minutes into the trading day. A survey of top economists shows the majority believe the U.S. will experience recession through 2009. The Kenyan family of the U.S. Democratic presidential candidate Barack Obama says they're looking forward to celebrating after the U.S. election. The idea of a first black U.S. president was in the minds of many Kenyans, and Obama mania helped businesses in Kenya sell their Obama products. And a NATO warship has escorted a merchant vessel chartered by the World Food Programme to deliver humanitarian aid to Somalia. Escorting operations are designed to protect WFP chartered vessels from piracy in one of the world's busiest shipping lanes. That's the latest here on Pest TV. Thank you.
with fine print just hours before the first Tuesday, after the first Monday in November, constitutionally when the Americans are supposed to go to the polls and choose the 44th president of the United States of America. We're taking a look at all the controversy surrounding the election, how the world views the election. From London, we're joined by Dr. James Boyce, Assistant Professor of International Political Studies at Richmond, the American International University in London, and founder of the Resolute Group. From Austin, Texas, we're joined by Wayne Slater, author and senior political writer at Dallas Morning News, co-author of Bush's Brain, How Karl Rove Made George W. Bush Presidential. By the phone, from Austin, Texas, by Alex Jones, investigative journalist, documentary filmmaker, owner of Infowars.com. Gentlemen, once again, our pleasure. But let's take a look at the websites of a few other parties called third parties in the U.S., Constitution Party, the Socialist Party USA, the Peace Freedom, Peace and Freedom Party, the Party of Principle, again, the Libertarian Party, the Green Party. And, of course, the Green Party says the real difference, is talking about the real difference between the Democrat and Republican parties. Do they represent your interests and values? The Democrats talk about the different policies, positions, and priorities we see from a Democrat in the White House versus a Republican. Most Democrat and Republican politicians, including Clinton, Gore, Kerry, and Bush, hold similar positions on major issues, and that's why we need a real choice to polls, a party that gives power to we the people instead of powerful corporations. Then the site brings up a list of different issues and say where they happen to be the same. It says issue, Green Party, Republicans, Democrats. And it talks about major issues like invasion and occupation of Iraq, where it says Green Party opposes, but Republicans and Democrats both support. And when you go to the details, it says even invasion of Iraq, most Democrats, if not Barack Obama, they supported that. They actually signed the authorization and also still support that. The Patriot Act, invasion of Afghanistan, these are what Republicans and Democrats are all the same. Kosovo war, military budgets, Israeli occupation of West Bank and Gaza, global warming, reduction of greenhouse gas emissions, a right to choose, national health insurance. It goes on and on and on, simply saying they're both the same. We've had Alex Jones already saying that, but Alex, back to you if you have any more comments
on whether or not
the Democrats, Republicans are the
same. I have a lot of comments. At the end of the last segment, I was unable to finish what I was saying, so I'd like to finish that, but that dovetails, that connects in to your latest question. You know, both your guests are admitting that we're seeing continuity. You know, whether John McCain gets in or whether Barack Obama gets in, you're going to see continuity. And that's because the big multinational corporations, the globalists, who openly, own both the major parties, are in control of both of these men. And until the 1990s, you could get a third party in the debates. You could get other parties in the debates, and then the people could make a choice watching the presidential debates. That's why you had Ross Perot getting close to 30%. Since then, this private corporation, the Debate Commission, at the pressure from the Republican and Democrats, has closed the debates. And so we need to have larger debates. The first debate should have 5, 6, 7, 8 different candidates. They should be real debates, not just questions and answers. You have the mainstream media here in the United States gives almost no attention to third parties or alternative parties, especially if they have any clout. And so we have a constriction in the amount of choices the public has by the controlled corporate press, you know, that's owned by the same banks and bomb makers that own the two major parties. And so that's the issue we're dealing here with. And Barack Obama is only different from John McCain and George Bush cosmetically. And that's why Wall Street's giving him more money than anybody else, because they believe he can neutralize the left to support these wars. He's talked about needing to have conflicts with Russia. He came out against Russia with what happened in Georgia, when Georgia, it's now admitted, and the State Department admits, snuck attack the Russian held area of Ossetia and Abkhazia. We have all of this going on. And we have Barack Obama, no different from Bush when it comes to the banker takeover bill known as the bailout. So the point I'm making here is Congress has an 11% approval rating. Now, in fact, that was a few months ago. Now it's a 9% approval rating, the lowest in U.S. history. I go back to that point. I'd like to hear your guests speak to this. The reason they have the lowest approval rating in history in the United States is because the people have figured out that both parties are controlled by the same interest.
All right.
They just hate George Bush so much that they're giving Barack Obama a chance. And I'm telling you, Go ahead.
Let's put the question across to Wayne Slater. Wayne, of course, the only body less popular than the president right now in the U.S. happens to be the Congress. So does that mean that the Americans are right now aware of the fact that Democrats and Republicans, as Alex suggests, well, simply are no different, and they're not the ones they want in office?
That's part of it. I think that there are not distinct differences between the party. Both candidates tend to, in this great race, have tended to run toward the center. But instead of being a recognition, as Alex suggests, by the American public that they're owned by corporations of the corporate global elite, I think it's more the fact that Americans are simply not happy with their political institutions at all because they didn't do anything. They basically have become more polarized. The institutions of government, the way we elect people, the shape of our districts producing different candidates and different office holders, and the rest of it has invited a kind of polarized gridlock, deadlock in places like Washington, where you have, certainly under George W. Bush, a polarized environment where very little gets done. There's not a sense of compromise. There's a sense of my way or the highway. And for normal Americans who are looking at their savings at home or looking whether they can pay their mortgage or they want to send their kids to college, and they watch these guys up in Washington, whether it's in the White House or in Congress, simply having such difficulty solving problems, that, I think, is more than anything else what has contributed to the low approval rating.
Let us also take a look at the so-called third parties. Why is it just blue and red? How would you explain the Electoral College? Now, people voting November the 4th, but the real votes for president cast on December 15th, when 538 people decide at the end of the day, Canadian press goes off to Electoral College, how Americans choose a new president. Current.com goes, Electoral College, our ballots should matter more. Forbes goes, the Electoral College, why Obama and McCain probably don't care about you, that means the voters. And we have another headline, popular vote versus Electoral College. This, of course, back in 2000 was quite notorious. So the electoral system in the U.S., is that really democratic?
I would like to comment. Go ahead.
I'll get back to you, Alex. Let's have Wayne in this, and then I'll get back.
Very, very briefly, it is democratic in a sort of small way, but you're right. Institutionally, it works against the interests of a truly vigorous, different approach, which a third-party candidate has to do. And as Alex said, the most recent example of a vigorous third-party challenge, Ross Perot, happened because he was offering something truly different from the other two.
Yeah.
You saw Teddy Roosevelt a century ago who was offering something really different. In neither case did they win. But the institutions, I think Alex is right, the institutions, the mechanisms of the way we do it, including the Electoral College, which has been with us for a long time, does militate against the advantage of a third, more inventive, vigorous, interested, and different approach to our governance.
All right, now a challenge for Alex to hold us by just a few seconds while I go to London. Dr. Boyd, I'd like to have your take on the democratic nature of U.S. electoral system.
Thanks very much. I'd like to come back, actually, to what Alex was saying, because I think there is a popular misunderstanding about the American political system. We talk about two parties, but I think you can make a very valiant claim that there are actually 50 parties, because the national party system in the United States is very, very different than it is here in England, for example. People are much more powerful at a local state level, which allows someone like Barack Obama to come forward and to defeat the sort of like the candidate of choice for the party, which would have been Hillary Clinton, for example. I'd also pull issue with this idea that third parties are not important in American politics. As Wayne rightly points out, we can think about the progressive movement, the Bull Moose Party of Theodore Roosevelt in the 20s. We can come forward to think about the Dixiecrats in the 40s. Alex talked about this idea that only until the 1990s could you have a party of a third party coming through to challenge. But Ross Perot, of course, actually challenged in the 1990s. And if Alex is worried about the influence of big money in American politics, well, the only reason that Ross Perot was able to stage his remarkable third-party success, in which he achieved 19% of the electoral popular vote in 1992, was because he was a billionaire. So if Alex is worried about big money in America, I think Ross Perot is an interesting and perhaps contradictory choice to hold up as an example.
No, let me counter that. What I'm saying, that's a misrepresentation. I was talking about the last time there was a true, strong third-party challenge. I wasn't discussing Ross Perot's money or how Ross Perot got into that position. I was talking about the attempts since then to further freeze third-party candidates and parties out of the larger discussion and out of the media and a circling of the wagons by the two-party dictatorship that we have in this country. Now, let me just be clear here. The American people, it isn't that nothing's being done in Washington. Thousands of pieces of legislation are being passed, okay, at the state and federal level. The people are frustrated because 91% in every major Gallup poll want to control the border. Both parties say no because the corporations want cheap labor and to drive down the wages. The American people, 75% or higher, don't want these wars, but both parties are still for it and still push it. On issue after issue, the Congress only has a 9% approval rating because the people understand that special interests are in control of the process more and more. They've always been there, but more and more, that's happening. So that's why this country's moving towards revolution. That's why the Army Times reported they have NORTHCOM, regular Army brigades, pull it up for yourself on Google, ready to, quote, deal with American insurrection. Because the American people understand that both parties are controlled. And you're right, they're hoping Barack Obama will do something different. They're hoping that it's all just rhetoric, that he's basically going to be lockstep with what George Bush did, because George Bush was lockstep with what the last president did, because it's a military-industrial complex that is using America as the engine of world government and the engine of empire for the Anglo-American establishment. So that's what we're dealing with here. And so instead of just talking about the horse race, Barack Obama, and of course John McCain, the supposed maverick, I'm pointing out that it's like a Don King boxing match where he owns both the fighters. Or it's like a horse race where all 10 of the horses are owned by the same person. They're going to end up winning. I'm saying our system fundamentally is breaking down and is corrupt, and we need gridlock in Congress. By the way, on the subject of the Electoral College, I'm all for it. Why am I for it? Our senators, until the 17th Amendment in 1913, were appointed by the state. They were appointed by the legislatures because the senators were creatures of the state, so you couldn't have an all-powerful federal dictatorship. And so now our popular vote is counted at the state level, and then it goes up for the number of electoral votes that that state has representing its congressional districts. And then, and they've never gone against this, the Congress then goes with the popular vote. So it's the same system of state power, and that's what we're dealing with here, and that's why I am against a, quote, popular vote, because that allows more federalization and more control. Imagine if our senators were still creatures of the states. The states are being turned into vassals of the feds. This is empire, and we need to turn this around. We need to turn this around today.
All right. No, Alex, we need to move on to a very important issue. AP goes, the world closely watching U.S. presidential elections, and op-ed news is if the world could vote in the U.S. election. And, of course, many believe Obama's international experience would go a long way in helping repair damage caused by the unpopular U.S.-led wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, with recent opinion polls from more than 70 nations favoring him, a resounding 3-1 over Republican John McCain. So, Wayne Slater, what's it say for the world, brief but broad?
I have to tell you that many American voters, if they knew that the rest of the world wanted Barack Obama, it would not be a positive for Barack Obama. On the other hand, there is a general sense, and I think Barack Obama is going to pull the troops out of Iraq. I think he's going to reposition some troops into Afghanistan, as he promised.
And Pakistan.
And there is going to be a very active effort to reach out to the rest of the world in a way the Bush administration has not done. This is going to be a change, a difference. Now, maybe some critics don't think that's enough, but this administration is going to do that. I have great confidence.
We'll see.
If Barack Obama is elected tomorrow, you're going to see a different America in terms of its relationship with the rest of the country, including the Middle East.
Wayne, let me ask you this then real fast. What is going to... Why, then, is Joe Biden and others saying, get ready for him to do something internationally? What is this crisis? You know, you're kind of an insider in the Democratic Party. I mean, you've been flying around with Obama. All these leaders, including in Europe, have said a major crisis on the 21st and 22nd of January when he is inaugurated. Colin Powell said it on Meet the Press. Can you please enlighten us and tell us what this major international crisis is going to be that Joe Biden says his running mate is going to be very unpopular with the left? Sounds like going into Pakistan to me.
Wayne?
That's entirely possible. Pakistan is a more aggressive approach to Pakistan as a possibility. What Biden said was that the new president, whoever it was, would be challenged, would be tested, especially if it's a new president like Barack Obama. I don't know what it's going to be, Alex. It's going to be something. Somebody's going to rattle their saber somewhere. But I do think that most forces, whether they're in the Middle East or elsewhere, whether it's North Korea, understand that there is a continuity, whether you like it or not, in the United States.
No, I know there
is. And any challenge of this president, whoever it is going to be met by this government. Absent that, we're going to see a different approach and attitude by a Barack Obama administration to its dealings with the rest of the world, a willingness to...
I agree. It's going to be a velvet glove, and that's why the corporations want him, because he can sell the world on accepting a couple more wars.
But let's have Dr. Boies and Dr. Right. Boies from so many, actually. Let's talk about continents right now. Of course, the Middle East as well. Let's talk about transatlantic relations. Let's talk about Latin America. Let's talk about the Middle East, Iraq and Afghanistan. Of course, briefly, but broadly. The difference.
Well, I think it's interesting that the article that you initially referenced talked about Barack Obama's international experience. I would have thought that if Barack Obama had a weakness, it was his lack of an international experience. I do hope the paper wasn't referring to his brief but glorious European tour, which saw him come to London and Berlin earlier in the summer.
The new German Führer.
No sort of experience to base upon whatsoever. John McCain arguably has a far greater international experience in dealing with the press and with the international leaders. So I think that's a little bit of a misnomer on that account. In terms of how he's going to deal with things, as I said earlier on, tone is going to have an awful lot to do with this. I think he will be more prepared to take an aggressive stance with Pakistan and their perhaps inability
Does that mean a new war?
Does it mean a new war? No, I don't think it means a new war. I think it means taking on a slightly different approach with regard to Pakistan. I think what Obama will do will be to shift quite rightly the focus away from Iraq towards the battlefront in Afghanistan and to hopefully try and alleviate the pressure which is on the British troop contingent in that part of the world.
But only on the surface. They're going to stay in Iraq. They're going to leave at least 50,000 troops there. And bring in
that,
more.
That's the question. Dr. Boies, how about Iraq? Do you see just residual forces left in Iraq, according to Barack Obama? What does he mean by that? 50,000, 60,000 on a permanent basis?
I'm not an insider of the Pentagon. I can't comment upon exactly what figure is going to be there. I would agree with Alex that America, where it goes overseas, tends to remain. And this is one of the main arguments against it.
Yeah, so they're going to depoliticize it. A liberal, it's a Democrat. It's okay to keep the troops there, and then we'll just forget about it.
Hang about. Not at all. I think one of the main complaints against American foreign policy is this idea that it doesn't have an exit strategy because it doesn't intend to ever leave, and I think there is a major problem there. I think the main shift is going to move away from Iraq towards Afghanistan, but I do think that as armies after armies and centuries after centuries have discovered, the British included, Afghanistan is very much a black hole into which a number of Western powers have sunk. And I fear the United States is just going to be the latest in a long line.
I agree with you. It's collapsing right now. The forces are already pinned down in, what, two or three major cities? I mean, Mohammad Karzai is really only the mayor of Kabul. And the rest of the troops are there just guarding the opium fields to make sure that gets shipped out to America's breakfast tables. But bottom line here, ladies and gentlemen, get ready for the New World Order. Get ready. They have announced that they're going to have a small group of private central banks running the world's finance, controlling everything through new international agreements. And Bush's legacy is going to be to demonize true conservatism, demonize the United States, and then basically set us up for the next phase of the New World Order globalism based out of Europe. And so, you know, basically, I want it on record that George Bush is not from Texas. George Bush is not a real conservative. George Bush was a globalist puppet who was put in there to make everybody have rage and hate the United States so the establishment could then give us their new savior, their new world leader, their new world president, as Newsweek calls him, Barack H. Obama. And he is there to fool the world. And I'm telling you, we're in for hard times, ladies and gentlemen. Just get ready. And Afghanistan and Pakistan and encircling Russia and that sneak attack that NATO and the U.S. did through their proxy in Georgia and the nerve of our media, that shows how reckless they are, to come on our TV sets and say Russia snuck attack them. I mean, we're in a lot of trouble. And I'm telling you, They have told us, Powell listed the days this is supposedly going to happen. And I'm telling you, they're going to try to make him look like a tough war hawk. They may even do some more stage Gulf of Tonkin stuff to basically christen, have an inaugural terror event or something so that Barack Obama can pose as a savior.
All right, we have about a minute left. Wayne Slater, I'd like to have more from you on Obama and the international scene once, if his president, if polls are proven right. The Palestinian issue, the Latin American issue.
He's already promised in this campaign. Yeah. He is going to be much more open in dealing with Latin America. He's going to be much more open, frankly, in dealing with Iran in an effort to deal and to reverse the attitudes of the rest of the world, the bad attitudes about the United States. This is going to be a very different administration.
Good cop, bad cop.
And with respect to going actively against war, the American people have no appetite for an active military expedition now after this debacle in Iraq. This administration will be governed by an American attitude in terms of the public that will really be designed in engaging the rest of the world in a positive, at least in a communicative way.
Corporate PR.
The instinct is what we're going to see.
All right. That's pretty much the time we had for another edition of Fine Print, a very special 1 hour before November 4th, U.S. presidential election, what's at stake for the U.S. and the world. We'll have a special coverage of that. From London, we're joined by Dr. James Boyce, Assistant Professor of International Political Studies at Richmond, the American International University in London, and founder of the Resolute Group from Austin, Texas, by Wayne Slater, author and senior political writer of the Dallas Morning News, co-author of Bush's Brain, How Karl Rove Made George W. Bush Presidential. He's also been in the planes of both campaigns for the past few weeks. By the phone from Austin, Texas, again, by Alex Jones, investigative journalist, documentary filmmaker, and owner of Infowars.com. Gentlemen, thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it. Thank you, gentlemen. Enjoyed talking to you.
Steve, and to our viewers, always watch out for the fine print right here on Press TV with me. I'm here.
Alex?
Yes.
Thank you. You were so perfect, gentlemen. I wish to have you again. Our shows on Wednesday. I'm going to talk with you again. Thank you. And
okay.
Have a very great time. Enjoy yourself. And you were really perfect, gentlemen. Thank you.
God bless. Sorry I got so fired up. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you.
All
you.
Right.
Bye-bye, sir.
All right.
Thank
bye-bye.
You.
Okay, we're back on Genesis. John Harmon, that all go-go for the last 50 minutes?
Yeah, it was excellent.
Come up on air. Tell us what you thought of that.
It was quite interesting to be on, international.
Yeah, I'm on Russian. I'm on British. I'm on Japanese. Every week now, pretty much. And a lot of these things, they have me on by phone, so that's good. They're driving me down to the studios all the time. But I found the Iranians are just incredibly fair to the United States. I mean, people think of Iranian TV as this America bashing. It's usually 2-1 against me. Well, not usually. It always is. Where there's like pro, nuke Iran stuff, with the U.S. people, even on their own shows.
Oh, yeah. They think all foreigners are, terrorists and whatnot.
But, I mean, Iran even puts on the American View, and so it's not fair and balanced. They give the Western BS view two-thirds of the time.
That's completely true, yeah.
So, I mean, but then meanwhile, our Fox TV or CNN's like watching Looney Tunes or something. It's so biased and so full of lies. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm glad we could do that simulcast here on the Genesis Network, our AM and FM affiliates, Global Shortwave, Satellite, the Internet, and the rest of it. If you're listening at Infowars.com or watching on PrisonPlanet.tv, you would have been able to see and hear the entire transmission. By tonight, they'll also have one of their top news shows worldwide and in Iran. Will be up there in their archive. It'll just be in the programs. Click on the fine print, and you can go and watch the video. Of course, you can see it at PrisonPlanet.tv. We're piping it in, but you can also watch it there with their feed without cutting into my video feed here in the studio. But great technology. We thank God for it. It's really hurting the New World Order. That's why they're trying to shut it down. I'm in Austin. Genesis is up in Minnesota. They're in London and Tehran, and you heard that all Nexus in. They were dialed into London. They were dialed into Austin. They were dialed in all over. That is definitely very, very interesting. Listen, we are going to have 4 hours of election coverage and your phone calls tomorrow. And then, of course, on Wednesday, we'll cover election fraud and whatever happens. I hope there's no rioting or problems, but we'll keep following this. The point is, Barack Obama is a puppet, and nothing's going to change but the rhetoric. They play good cop, bad cop. It'll be all the same policies, a different rhetoric. So we'll see what happens. You know, the torture, the secret arrest, the Military Commissions Act, the John Warner Defense Authorization Act, the end of posse comitatus, the Patriot Acts. You're not going to see any of that repealed, despite the fact that they're going to have the House, the Senate, and the executive. Now, that's the point. God bless you all. Rebroadcast starts in 1 minute at Infowars.com on the streams and at the podcast, downloaded by millions every week. God bless you all.